Welcome, everyone, to episode 244 of Radio Free Nintendo. I am your host, Jonathan Metz. With me, as always, is John Lindemann.
Always a pleasure, Johnny.
It is indeed. James Jones.
Hey.
Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And on my right, our old buddy, Michael Cole.
Hey, everyone. Hope you're not sick of me yet.
So we had Mike on a couple weeks ago from California. Now he's visiting Colorado, and so he's actually here with me sharing the microphone.
That's right. I brought the bad weather.
We got two turntables as well. But yes, sir, we are ready to roll with this episode, and we're going to actually get into a really exciting E3 preview feature in the second half of the show. But first up, as always, it's new business, and Greg has a new RPG to talk about.
I do, but first of all, I have completed now an acquisition that I've long sought after. I've finally completed my collection of Japanese N64 treasure games with the original Bangaio.
Nice.
The story goes that there's only 10,000 copies were ever made of this in Japan, so it is quite rare. But I managed to get it for, you know, it's not really a bargain. I'm sure obviously like the Dreamcast version is a lot more abundant because it was released in the West and, you know, all that sort of thing. So it's not exactly a bargain, but I did get it for after chipping and everything for about $60. So, you know, that's more reasonable than I've seen it go for in other venues, and it's in pretty good condition. So all I've managed to do is kind of test it at this point. So I haven't really been able to play the game very much. So it does seem like this might be the first N64 game after 15 years that I'll play with using the configuration where you have your left hand on the D-pad and your right hand on the analog stick.
Really?
Yeah, that does seem to work the best. Although I think Sin of Punishment probably would have worked quite well with that.
It does.
I just preferred the C buttons for some reason at the time.
The only game I've played with that configuration is like Kirby 64 or the Crystal Shards.
Basically,
are you saying it's your D-pad on the left hand and the joystick in the right hand?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, geez, no, I think GoldenEye had a mode for that, but that's about all I've seen.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was similar to the Turok, so-called Turok-style controls with first-person shooter, except it would have been nice to use the D-pad instead of the C buttons for moving around in those type of games, but the problem is then you're losing two big, useful action buttons, and so it ends up becoming, you know, if there was like a mirrored A and B button on the left side of the N64 controller, I think that would have been a lot more viable and in some cases would have been preferable. But instead you use the other side with all the little tiny buttons and kind of in a make-believe D-pad.
It's somewhat Sony-esque D-pad, I guess, because it is discrete buttons.
Yeah, good point, actually.
It does seem to control quite well like that, obviously. So in that scenario, you're kind of controlling the movement with the D-pad, which works quite well because these Bangaio's got a dash. You know, so, you know, you could just sort of double tap to dash that, you know, with the D-pad, and then you can fire all around you with the analog stick. So, Bangaio, from what I've heard, it sounds like I might like the original more than Spirits in many ways, you know, because it's a bit more orthodox. I mean, that's certainly a relative term when it comes to Bangaio in general. You know, it's more structured.
Yeah, have you gotten a sense for the way that it's structured? I mean, I always kind of thought that the original Bangaio had more like levels that were designed rather than these sort of rooms that you get in Spirits where it's like something that you could have made in the editor.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is what it's like, but honestly, so far, just like playing like the first level just to test it and what if that is not really going to give you much of a sense. But there's like 44 levels, I think, and I think most of them are significantly larger than the majority of the, you know, because there's hundreds of them, as you say. They're all these sort of bite-sized, quite frivolous in many cases, levels.
Yeah.
Not to say that there aren't some more grandiose designs in Spirits, but yeah, just from what I've heard, it sounds, and I like Spirits a lot, so, you know, if I do like this original game even more, I should enjoy it a fair bit. But in terms of the differences between the Dreamcast and the N64 versions, apparently there are people who prefer the N64 version, but I think that's mainly because of the control pad, number one, some of the issues, you know, that we just talked about, and number two, I think the scoring system was changed for the Dreamcast somewhat, so I guess they just liked it better the first way. But the Dreamcast version is, you know, technically superior, as you might expect. Although I think it still actually outputs at low res.
for performance reasons, probably.
But I'm pleased to have got... I'm not really what you'd call a collector, even though, you know, it's probably easier to pry the gun out of Chuck Heston's hands than it is to get a game that I have off me, you know, or in a used game store or anything. But with this, you know, I had Mischief Makers already. I got that really cheap. That was a bargain. Like, I got it for £7 boxed. And, you know, that was a victory. And I had Sin and Punishment from back in the day. So it just felt right to finish it off if I could get a reasonable price. But now I'll move on to what I've been playing a lot, quite a lot of, although I'm still pretty early on in it, but I thought it'd be time to talk about it. So as editor of the show, I am able to take a larger view of the content that we put out cumulatively between all of us on New Business. And so what I perceived was there was an acute deficit in 16-bit RPG talk recently. I thought I might grace us with a bit of Final Fantasy 3/6 for the Virtual Console in Europe. So I'm 4 hours in, I think, now.
Are we going to call this one Terra Train?
That's the thing. I really wish I could play this on the train. I'd certainly be making my way through it a fair bit quicker, I think.
There is a train in the game,
though. I am in that part. I'm on the Phantom train right now.
Highly memorable. I'm not going to tell you how, but there is a very cheap way that you can kill the boss of that area.
Okay.
A very memorable kind of trick that you can do on the boss. It's within the rules of the game. It's not like an exploit.
The interesting part of where I've reached now is that the sort of narrative structure is sort of splintered off into a bunch of like sort of mini parties of characters. And you actually get to choose which sort of part of the story you want to see first.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, completely kind of different from the other kind of its contemporaries or, you know, its predecessor, like FF4, you know, you're kind of always following Cecil around. Right. Obviously, there's a lot of comings and goings with your party, but you're anchored by that. And of course, Chrono is similar, but here you're sort of opening out and it does feel more like you're just getting, you know, a bunch of different perspectives on these kind of really big events that are going on in the world. You know, it's rather just like, okay, this is one person's story and we're following their journey. It is more of a, you know, kind of ensemble kind of thing. And you're seeing all these different parts of what's going on. And the story is, I mean, John raised this with reference to Chrono Trigger, but the story is, it does have some very kind of unpleasant elements. There is sort of like chemical warfare.
Eh.
An entire town's water supply is contaminated.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's very medieval the way it's done.
But still,
I feel bad because I'm like the only person here that hasn't played this game. It's on my radar.
We're going to make you want to play it.
Yeah, no, I already do want to play it. I almost got it for the Game Boy Advance, but I'm like, they're going to bring it out on Virtual Console events later.
I haven't played it in over a decade, so I'm barely remembering anything. So you're not entirely alone here.
Well, the problem is everyone talks about this game and talks about famous scenes from it, and it makes it, you know, it's like, well, okay, some of the spoilers are spoiled for me.
Yeah, I'm in very much the same position. I have heard things, you know, on this show and others. I know some of the pieces, but I don't really know how they fit together, you know, so
exactly.
I don't think it's going to affect my enjoyment too much.
Well, one thing that, you know, you were talking about how it kind of splits into multiple stories and you can do it in any order you want. That kind of reminds me of what they did with the After Years, where after the first segment, there were these side quests you could purchase online, and they were all kind of their independent quests.
Well, it's different, actually. In FF6, what Greg's talking about, and I'm glad you brought this up, Greg, because it is one of the most interesting things about that game. There are a number of places in the game. It's not just that once. It happens quite a number of times where your party will either be split into two in a mandatory way, mm-hmm. or else it'll say form two parties from your characters, and you choose which ones. And there's a lot of strategy in the combinations there. And then you're basically controlling both parties at the same time. You just push a button to switch between them. So it's actually more like Mario and Luigi, you know, where you're basically moving one character when they separate Mario and Luigi. You move one character over here and another over here, and they fight battles separately, and then they have to cooperate to flip switches and do puzzles, and they kind of move through the dungeon on parallel but different paths, and they reunite sort of at the end. And FF6 actually does that 3 or 4 times, and it becomes increasingly complex to the point where the last dungeon in the game, you actually have 3 full parties. And if you have all the characters, because there are 14 characters in the game, so if you have all 14 characters, you actually have to choose which 2 people to leave behind. So you really have to think about which of these characters is the most useful and how are they going to play together.
Right.
And you have a lot of choice in how you make these teams. I love that part.
It also forces you to use characters you probably wouldn't use otherwise.
Exactly. Because you have to use almost all of them. Right.
You know, I guess Tales of Symphonia kind of aped that a couple of places. That's the only other RPG I can think of where they do that.
Well, I mean, a lot of Tales games do that. They'll split the team up, as it were.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck with three characters you hate that can't do anything.
Well, Greg, all I'll tell you about the story is it gets darker. Like, shit gets realer.
I don't want to spoil it. There's a chapter where they go around killing puppies. Just for reference. Oh,
I did notice what I consider to be the most fearsome 16-bit RPG enemy sprite I've ever seen, which is the stray cat. It's got this one little paw sort of vaguely heading towards you. I do love those feeble enemies that are on the open world map.
It's pretty awful, actually.
I mean, that's the thing. It's obviously, it has random battles, which, you know, I was never exposed to when I put the only two RPGs that I played on the Super Nintendo were Chrono Trigger and Secret of Mana, which both, you know, you don't really have to deal with those random encounters. And so I've never got used to them. The first time I think that I would have played a game with random encounters in was Pokemon Pearl. So, you know, this is not anything that I developed a tolerance for as a younger person.
Especially now, they seem really archaic.
Yeah, I mean, at least with Pokemon, you've got that very clearly defined thing of, like, well, there is, you know, if you go in the grass, it can happen, you know? And if you want to kind of, you know, stick out of the grass as much as you want, well, then you can lessen the, you know, frequency. Whereas it's very occasional. Most of the time, it's not bad. So, you know, you just kind of walk in, it'll happen every so often. It's just the odd occasion where it's like, oh, you know, did I miss something back there? Or where am I supposed to go? You know, and then when you're kind of backtracking or, you know, you're sort of poking around, gets interrupted.
Yeah, it's like you're penalized for exploring.
A little bit, yeah. That is a frustrating feeling. And I imagine for a lot of people that grew up on 8-bit RPGs especially, or certainly, you know, something like FF2/4 on the Super Nintendo, you know, it wouldn't be as bad, or it wouldn't be as jarring anyway, but it is to me.
Well, I think in the defense of FF6, there are a couple of modes of transportation in the game that let you actually get around without fighting battles. Which, you know, you're not going to have right in the very beginning, but eventually you will have that. And then also, there are a couple items that you get later in the game that can actually reduce the frequency of random battles or turn them off altogether, which you would only want to use in a very extreme case because it's going to cause you balancing problems since you're not leveling up.
I'm kind of fine with it. I guess it would be could be useful in a situation, as I say, where you did want to retrace your steps or something. Maybe then you say, all right, well, I've already fought a certain number. Let's put a cap on that and then move on. But I did, I do really enjoy just the 16-bit presentation. It's pretty much towards the apex of 16-bit presentation. It's earlier than Chrono Trigger, isn't it? Is it 94 that it came out in Japan or something?
It's a little earlier, but I think in some ways it's more showy in a technical way.
Yes, well, I could see that. But, you know, I mean, just the music and the sprite artwork and all that, you know, I mean, obviously I'm not comparing literally the same games here, especially because Final Fantasy 4/2, you know, in its 16-bit incarnation was a lot earlier game. What was that, 91 in Japan? I think it was a really quite early Super Nintendo game. But for me, you know, comparing this with Final Fantasy 4 on the DS, there's a lot of things about the presentation there that I like. But I do prefer the 16-bit style. I love the sound of the music, you know, even though it's not music that I know, really. I probably heard bits of it elsewhere. Just that general Super Nintendo sound is just pleasant to my ears, I think. And then also the environments and the characters and all that, they've just got a charm. And it's very detailed at times, very impressive, actually, for an RPG. I assume it was probably quite a big leap over 4.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, based on what I've seen of 4 in its Super Nintendo incarnation, I've not really seen much of 5, I guess, just because it didn't come out anywhere else, and B, it seems to be one of the less sort of famed Final Fantasies, if you like, because it just hasn't been remade quite so much or whatever.
Right. Yeah, Five's only been released, well, I guess twice in the West, because they did do that GBA version.
Yeah.
which again is pretty hard to find. But all the GBA Final Fantasies sort of had emulation problems. And they did a release on PS1 that I found almost impossible to play because the load times and were so bad, yeah. And there were other glitches too. But yeah, I'm really eager for Square to do justice to FF5 and put it out a really nice version for the whole world to enjoy, because the people who have played it really, really, really love it. But I have played enough of FF5 to tell you that it looks a lot closer to 4 than it does to 6. 6 right. was...
That was the reach.
It was the pinnacle of what Square could do on the Super Nintendo. Chrono Trigger is more beautiful in some ways. It's more colorful. It's more cartoon-like. And in some ways, the presentation is just better overall. But I think in terms of just driving the system, FF6 was the best Square could do. And I think they probably put the most money into that. And that, I mean, its popularity and its acclaim for that aspect probably drove them into all the mess of FF7 and wanting to go completely overboard with the presentation, which,
yeah.
Again, as I've said many times, in RPGs, that really wasn't done until FF7. That was a really weird sea change for that genre. So 6 was wonderful because, I mean, I would have played it no matter what it looked like, because I love 4. So I was excited for FF6, but the fact that it looked and sounded so good was really just a wonderful surprise. It was kind of not expected or demanded by the fan base. They just decided to do it.
No, I've been enjoying it so far. I think it looks very, very nice even now. I mean, obviously, it is one of the things you do notice having played Chrono Trigger on DS is just how much like the menus can take up of the screen at times, like during battles and stuff. But obviously, it was all designed with that in mind. So far, it's been a very pleasant experience, but it is going to be slow going. So perhaps I'll talk about it again a couple months from now or something when I'm actually getting towards the end.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about Dragon Quest VI right now. I've played a fair bit of it the past week, but I just don't know what I would say differently than I did last time. You know, I mean, I've played over 10 hours now, but it's Dragon Quest. Like, there's 10 hours really isn't that much, and I haven't seen anything that really sets it that much apart from the other games, so I'm just not going to talk about it this week other than what I just did. So, James.
Yes.
What you been up to, man?
So, I've actually got to put real time into the Ghost Recon 3DS game. I don't have a whole lot to add to my comments with respect to the fact that it still feels very much inspired by the tactical RPGs of handhelds past. The game does kind of have a relatively slow pace. At least it feels that way to me personally. A lot of it's advanced 6 steps, but you can't shoot because you've walked too far next turn. Advance, right. Next turn.
Yeah, Neil's review made many of the same complaints. One thing I really took away from his review is that more so than in other tactical RPG games, it feels like you spend a lot of setup time in the beginning of every battle just moving guys around before they actually...
Right, before they encounter anything.
Right.
Oh.
Which I think that's always... There's always a bit of that in these types of games, but it sounds like this one really just doesn't handle it very well.
What to me is the issue is that even though these are relatively compact battlefields, so much damn time is taken just walking that it sort of makes the game feel less involved. So it's led to me not feeling this really strong, compelling force to keep going. And for whatever reason, that means I'm only maybe 10 missions into the game, which seems bizarre since if I can beat a mission in half an hour, which is about the time frame, I should be a lot further on than that after basically having it for 3 weeks. But it is what it is. It's also, I mean, I assume it gets harder, but so far it's been, even on the hardest setting, stupidly easy.
You would go straight to the hardest setting.
Well, I mean, I might as well, at least to see how hard it is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, everybody is saying that the game was basically designed by the dude who did XCOM 20 years ago.
Okay.
And I mean, I've talked about XCOM on the show before. You can get it on Steam for like $2. If you love tactical RPGs, it's incredible. It's an amazing game, but it'll fucking destroy you. Like, XCOM is brutal. Even on the easiest settings, it will just slaughter you. And the stuff you're saying about how the battles are so slow is hilarious to me because in XCOM, the aliens can kill your guys on the first turn before you get a chance to move.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not real fast and it's not real hard so far, and it does take away a little bit from the game.
Did you ever play Rebel Star Tactic Command on GBA?
No, I did not.
Because that was the same guy, and that got really good reviews, although it's a pretty obscure game.
Well, with a title like that, go figure.
Yeah, I know, Rebel Star. I don't know if it addresses these issues or not, but it's another game by that same guy, and I've always wanted to play it. Because I do like XCOM, even though I'm terrible at it.
Well, I could see you enjoying this game whenever you get around to getting a 3DS.
Oh, you're saying the baby game is good for Johnny, right?
Yes.
Exactly. I do Final Fantasy Tactics, bro.
I'm not saying the game is hard. I'm just saying if you liked XCOM, you'll probably enjoy this game.
They sound like very different games, though, to me.
It's been a long time. I'm sure he's learned a few things and forgotten a few things.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good game. I can tell that much. It just doesn't feel like it's getting me.
Yeah, it's like Wars is spelled with a Z for Johnny. Like babies or horses.
It is an Ubisoft game. I cannot wait for the E3 press event where Ubisoft reveals their new logo and they flip the S for a Z.
Yeah. More like Ubi Zoloft, am I right?
Oh, I see what you did there.
I am walking right out of the theater when that happens.
You'll be like, check please.
Oh, that could be this year, just for reference. Beyond that, I've been going through my, not back catalog, games I played a long time ago. And I did sort of a quick tour of the Total War games while I'm waiting for my new computer to get here. And I found that pretty much what I said almost 2 years ago now, once they introduced guns to those games, they became completely broken. So once I have a computer that can play the new one, I'll probably be talking about that because they took most of the guns out.
What's the new one called?
It's Shogun 2.
Shogun 2 Total Wars?
Yes, no Z.
I was about to ask.
Yeah.
Good preemption there.
This is a Sega game, not an Ubisoft game. It is still really weird that that's a Sega franchise now. It's probably been about 6 years, and that's still really strange to me.
James, do you remember when Sega tried to turn the Total Wars franchise into a console action game?
Yeah.
It was Rome something?
No, it was Spartan Total Warrior.
Spartan, that's right. I actually think I either reviewed that or at least previewed it on GameCube. It wasn't very good.
No, I mean, why would you have the Creative Assembly make an action game?
It was very similar to those Lord of the Rings action games on GameCube, but it was really bad. It was not...
It would be like if they had to make a Sonic game. It just makes no sense.
It would be just like if Sega tried to make a Sonic game, you mean?
Come on. The last one wasn't bad.
Actually, we just found out that Sonic Generations is going to be on 3DS. So
well,
that, not
seems
that I'm
to be.
Surprised.
Oh, it could be the DIMS version, is better.
Which just sounds good.
Yeah, it's that was kind of like a weird, almost accidental announcement from Sega. Nice work, guys. But, you know, that's pretty much it for me this week. So hopefully once my life gets back to normal, I can get into actually playing games that I'm gets real burn real time with.
I hear you.
But that is kind of a weird streak of strategy games I've been on lately.
So, John, what's going on in the world of Chrono Trigger?
Choo-woo! The Chrono Train just keeps chugging along, my friend.
Dear God.
It's gotta be getting near the end of the track.
Yeah,
now.
I was at Mother Brain, ironically. Titled boss.
Is it ironic?
I think unimaginatively titled.
Unimaginatively,
yeah, I would
say
it's not like it's actually male and not a brain.
Mm-hmm. True.
Oh, is that the in the factory?
Father Pancreas.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember that the name of that name.
That's with the pink robot, right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Yeah. All right. Yes.
The horrible pink robot character.
Yeah, it's the rainbow boss at the end.
Yeah.
That you fight. Yeah, pretty much she kicked my ass, and I think I'm going to go back and do the Sunstone quest, wherever that is. I still can't figure out exactly where that is.
The Sunstone is one of the most valuable quests you can do.
Where does it start, though?
Where does it start?
Yeah, I can't. That's one I can't figure out.
It starts in the future. There's a temple in the future that you can go to with the flying ship.
Okay.
And you get the stone there. And there's a nasty boss you have to fight to get it, and I'll tell you this as a hint. if you haven't been back to the prehistoric shop where they trade you equipment for fangs and horns and things like that,
yeah.
Go back there and check on that because they've got new stuff that's way better.
Oh, really? I've never did that.
Yeah. Okay. It actually upgrades a couple of times throughout the game, but if you go in there towards the end, you can get some extremely powerful and useful special equipment there. It's probably only useful in a couple of particular boss battles, but the one that for the Sunstone is one of them.
Yeah.
So, and you can go and earn a bunch of, you know, earn all the barter items very easily to get that stuff, and it's worth your while to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of spells. Like, I did some forum research, and it seems like there's a couple of spells that I'm missing. Like, Marl, she's missing Provoke, which I don't have yet. Apparently, she gains that at some point, and that makes that battle against Mother Brain much easier because you have the three, like, kind of computer panels that keep healing her.
Yeah.
And if you kill all three of them, she starts doing this, like, crazy attack that hits everybody for, like, 400 or 500 hit points. But as long as you have one of those up, she won't do that, but the problem is she keeps getting healed for 1,000 hit points every time. So you have to pretty much cast Provoke on one of them to kind of keep it from healing her. But I can't do that because I don't have Provoke.
Oh, it's like Berserk in Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And I never use these strategies. I think I just sort of, like, grit my teeth and
brute force
pour through and brute force these sort of battles.
Well, it's tough for me because it's been, well, on DS I played it from zero, but still I know the game so well that I don't even think about this stuff, but like on my Super Nintendo cartridge, I've been through New Game Plus so many times that I don't need strategy to play the game anymore.
I mean, I should say I choose the turn-based, not the active timing battle when I play the game, so that probably helps with gritting your teeth and bearing through some of this. It gives you more time to think, like, okay.
That's the kind of the easy mode.
Yeah,
not that there's
any
shame.
No, I just the mode I play. I didn't like it real time. Yeah. I don't like that.
Active is definitely more, there's more pressure on you to act quickly.
I could probably do now since I played Final Fantasy IV.
Right.
Well, you know what? Maybe I turned off active time in Final Fantasy IV too. I think I just don't like active time battle.
Yeah.
I quite like it, but what I did is you could also, like, just dabble with the speed of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could dial it up and down according to whether you felt you needed more time. And then, of course, with Chrono Trigger, once you get into the realms of New Game Plus, just put it up to maximum.
Yep, sure. So I'll try that, Johnny. The next thing is the Sunstone quest, because apparently I have a feeling I'm kind of under-geared at this point.
Yeah, if you haven't done Sunstone, you very well could be.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, you've got that pendant, and there are a number of treasure chests around the game that you can now open with the pendant. Some of those have some really good stuff in them, especially the one with that pyramid.
Oh, yeah, the blue pyramid.
It's kind of out in the woods somewhere.
So you have to choose.
Yeah, yeah, you choose there. But either way you go is worth doing.
Sure, yeah.
Well, the good thing is I think a lot of other people are probably playing Chrono Trigger now, too, now that it's out on Virtual Console. So all of a sudden, you're very relevant, John Linden.
Don't get used to it, people.
Time is a big circle.
Chrono Trigger is a magical game.
It really is. Mm-hmm. All right, so Mike, what did you want to bring up this week?
Well, I've been revisiting an old game that's near and dear to my heart, Yoshi's Island for the Super Nintendo.
Nice.
I had not played the Super Nintendo version in many years. I mean, I have the GBA game, but I had forgotten just how beautiful the Super Nintendo version is. Unfortunately, I had to use it on my HDTV, and since Nintendo, for shame, doesn't have this on Virtual Console, I busted out my Super Nintendo to play this. And my TV does a decent job of displaying S-video, but it kind of has this weird flicker effect where it goes kind of jumps up and down a little bit because of the deinterlacing.
Right.
It's a little weird, but otherwise it looks good, and it's just a lot of fun, and the larger screen really helps.
It's cramped, isn't it, with on GBA? I mean, it's surprisingly playable, actually. I didn't pick it up when it first came out. I picked it up, the Japanese version of the GBA game, like, really cheap years after, you know, just to have it, and there's some extra levels. And I was kind of surprised. It was not as bad as I was expecting in terms of the loss of the playfield, but there's still a big difference that you notice if you go back.
The Super Nintendo game, it sounds better, it looks a little better.
It's the rotation stuff has been a lot of the most famous example is the touch fuzzy get dizzy thing, it looks really stodgy on GBA, but it's really nice on Super Nintendo.
Anyway, I don't know what in particular I wanted to say, but it still holds up really well. I mean, it still feels like a very modern platformer. Maybe it's because one of the last 2D platformers Nintendo made before it went all 3D, really. I mean, I guess Donkey Kong Country series did this too, but I hadn't really noticed that the screen is very much the game. There isn't like menus and stuff at the top or bottom. There aren't coins. It's just beautiful. Just it looks like a painting, you know?
Well, it's definitely because of the aesthetic. You know, they wanted it to be as much just like a kid's drawing on the TV as possible.
Yeah. But I mean, the level design, even really early on, is clever. People say it isn't challenging, but I disagree. I think it's still a lot of fun and has a decent challenge, especially if you want to go for perfect scores.
Oh, it's damn hard.
That's actually always been my problem with Yoshi's Island, because I played it on Super Nintendo. I rented it, and then I own it on GBA, and I've played it a couple times on there all the way through. And I don't like this game as much as other people do. And I think maybe it's because if you just play it straight through, it's too easy. And if you try to get 100 points on every level, it's almost impossible. And
well, you've got the buyout.
It's the stars, you know, and everything. Yeah.
You've got the buyout with the stars, though, because you can go to the menu and you've got items that you can store from that you earn from the mini games, like plus 10 stars. So you can buy your way out of the stars.
And you can also use the trick of getting the brown eggs, which allow you to generate your own stars.
Generate stars, yeah.
I mean, there are gimmicks to.
I never knew how to make those. I guess.
Also, one of the changes in Yoshi's Island DS, which I kind of approve of, actually, is that if you get hit but you snag baby whatever in that game, whatever baby may be on your back, if you snag him or her almost instantly, it doesn't cost you a star.
Exactly.
See, I like that a lot better. I think that's fairer, because it can be very cruel sometimes, where it's just like, you know, you just got grazed and you had him straight back on your back. It was, you know, almost bang bang, but it still took that 1 point away, so you have
Then you use your brown egg on an enemy nearby, and you get your star back. But you need to know that trick.
Yeah, sure.
And sometimes you can't, depending on where exactly you are.
I just think giving that little bit of wiggle room, where it's like, well, if you get him back right away, then there's no. But that, I think that was a good choice. But of course, the compromise. I don't think you had those items in Yoshi's Island DS where you could just plus 10 your way back into the perfect area. So I guess that was why they compromised.
Yeah, I would prefer for it to be skill based than use this item at the end. You know, I think it's just that because there's such a penalty. I mean, if you're trying to play it for score, there's such a penalty for getting hit. I feel like I end up playing the game almost like I really am babysitting Baby Mario, and that's not really a very pleasant way to play the game.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think the sad part of that is that those secret levels are really worth playing, in my opinion. Yeah. They are really fucking hard.
So in the GBA game, they lowered the bar, so you don't have to get perfects to unlock them.
They did indeed, yeah.
Which I'm not sure I approve of, because I'm old school hard cold, but I understand why they did it. I mean, it disincentivizes you from going for 100% on the levels, and I think that there is value in going for 100% just because you discover nooks and crannies you hadn't found before.
I mean, in some ways, I just kind of think it might have been nicer if they'd emphasize more in terms of unlocking the secret levels anyway, just finding the flowers and red coins, because those are the ones that really kind of, I mean, finding extra star clouds and stuff. I mean, you know, there is some exploration associated with keeping your star count up. But
yeah, but a lot of those are just kind of floating in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, some are secret or require like a bit of, yeah, but yeah, I mean,
it's like that Mickey Mousecapades game on NES. You guys ever played that? Where
I own that game.
You find keys and stuff by literally just jumping, shooting everywhere.
It's just like my own secret castle.
Yeah, but how's that?
Yes,
it
is.
You can't defend one concept and then not defend it in Mylon's Secret Castle when it's the same thing.
Look, I don't defend anything in Mylon's Secret Castle. I've never said anything more than I love it, and I think it's very ambitious.
I think the word you're looking for is ill-conceived.
It is. Look, that game is messed up, like worse than the original Metroid. The design of it is so insane and brutal. And
yeah, it's quite difficult.
It's like a game that you pretty much have to have a guide to play through it.
But you did. You had to subscribe to Nintendo Power to beat it.
Yes.
Just to translate it, really. Mylon's Secret Castle is not a game I'm going to give to people and say, here, you got to play this. And it's clearly a game that I like more than anyone else. So
yeah. The other thing I wanted to touch on is that I've been playing Radiant Historia on my 3DS inexplicably, but that's what I've been doing. And I don't mind the smaller screen. I choose to make it the smaller native resolution screen because I don't like the stretching, because the stretching is for some reason not quite – it stretches it horizontally a little bit. I don't know why, but it does. But I have a really pet peeve about the interface in 3DS for this, and I'm hoping they'll fix it in a menu update. You have to hold down the start button to put it in standard def or
right pixel for pixel
original pixel perfect mode. But you have to hold, I mean, it's not clear when you push it, so you have to like hold it before you select it and keep holding it until the game starts, because I let go shortly after pushing it and it whatever, I had to restart the whole game.
It's like holding B on a GameCube controller for progressive stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make a sound or anything.
Right.
So you don't really know when it's okay to let off. And
right.
It should just be a menu option.
But exactly. That's the thing. There is no reason why they have this obtuse, undocumented. Or
why is it not just like an option when you click the game? It says, do you want to play the stretch turn?
Just put it in the settings menu. In the settings menu.
But I mean, there are some games where I'd rather play it stretched and some where I'd rather play it not stretched.
My point is I don't have a problem with holding down start to do the alternate mode, but I should be able to choose which one I want as the primary mode of display.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it would be good if you knew that start does that.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. It's virtually undocumented.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I was telling Mike last night, it just stinks of something that they added at the very last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we don't have time to redesign the UI, so just make it some secret button press combo.
Button combo. But yeah, that game would look really bad. It's stretched.
Yeah, it does.
3D polygonal games actually look pretty decent. I think it just depends on the game itself.
I don't know. We could also maybe talk a little bit about some games I played with Johnny last night. As I mentioned last time I was on, I'm not a fan of first-person shooters, but I decided to give it another go with Johnny. We played a little bit of GoldenEye, and it was reasonably fun. I do suck at the game, which is to be expected, but it was enjoyable. I enjoyed playing it. We played for maybe 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, we played split screen, and the problem with that is that most of those levels are made for three or four people, not for two. Yeah. So there's a certain amount of just running around or looking at the radar and just, okay, now I have to trek back to the other guy and then, oh, now I'm dead. Because, you know, you die in like 3 seconds in that game. I don't think it's as much fun as the original N64 game, but I certainly think they nail the tone and the feel of it. You know, I mean, I think it does a great job at evoking that nostalgia for the N64 game without infringing on copyrights. And also, I respect it very much as a distinct mode from online. I mean, because of that, GoldenEye is almost like three games in one, because you have the campaign, which is very good and really its own thing. And then you have the online mode, which is completely different than the split screen. So I like that these are all distinct things that they, you know, they design them individually. And clearly they put a lot of effort into all of them.
And I think we discovered that there are some interesting trade-offs on some of the characters you choose. Like Johnny chose Oddjob when he first started playing. And I was like winning by a lot. I'm like, there's no way I could be winning. I suck at first person shooters. I barely play them. And Johnny plays them with some regularity. And so what we realized is Oddjob is short. And so therefore at normal height, when I'm aiming just straight, I'm aiming at headshot level, which really, you know, made a big difference.
Yeah. It's just huge. I mean, because in the old days, it was always the Oddjob was so small that you couldn't bloody hit him at all as you tried.
Well, it's the difference in vertical aiming systems between the N64 and the Wii.
Yeah.
And also just the field of vision and everything. There's a number of subtle differences that make it, you know, like it's almost the opposite of the advantage that it used to be to play as Oddjob.
And I think I've pointed this out of the show before, but it just bears repeating. The whole Oddjob thing is so messed up. Like, Oddjob is not short. Watch Goldfinger, he's not short. They've somehow conflated Oddjob with Knick-Knack, who is Scaramanga's midget attendant in Man with the Golden Gun, presumably because both Bond films have gold in the title.
Yeah.
And not only did that affect the N64 game, but has now, by pure nostalgia value, has infected this Activision game as well.
Isn't Oddjob actually kind of big? Like,
yeah, I thought he was.
I think he was a wrestler, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, he's a wrestler. He's massive. He's absolutely huge. But what he's very stout. You know, so
yeah. I mean, I don't think he's a tall guy, but
he's a brick house.
Yeah, he's like at least 5 feet tall. He's not that short.
He's not short at all.
He does kill a guy with his hat, which they got right.
Well, no, they turned his hat in the game though into essentially is a localized nuclear weapon. I mean, yeah, it touches by a hat, you're dead.
Well, it's really good up close, but it's hard to aim. And it flies slowly, so you can actually dodge it after it's been released. So it's not like a bullet. I don't think it's overpowered. And again, it's kind of compensated for the fact that he's easier to headshot in this game. But I think the hat's so funny. And I love how it gets stuck in the wall if you miss. And it just hangs there.
It's pretty important in the film, fact that it gets stuck in things.
Yeah, so they got that part, you know. It's cool.
Now, this game is on sale right now at Amazon for $20. Is it worth $20, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, John, you'll love
definitely.
It.
Definitely.
It's so much better than The Conduit.
As someone who played two missions in the first player mode of this game, I think it's worth $20.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
It's really good, John.
Yeah, you know, what you should have done is play Perfect Dark together, split screen. I assume you could do that on XBLA.
We could if I had two controllers.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, Johnny.
Jesus.
I don't have two Xbox controllers. And Mike was like, that's amazing. I mean, you know, I've had an Xbox for nearly 3 years. And Mike was like, I can't believe you've never played any local multiplayer on there. I was like, I do all the time, but I use plastic guitars and drums to do it. Like, I don't, you know, I don't have two Xbox 360 normal controllers.
So did you play Sonic with maracas too?
I didn't play Sonic.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I might just pick it up. I might just pick it up then.
Well, I guess that really does prove that Wii is the local multiplayer console.
It does.
Yeah, but, you know, also, if I'd had Xbox earlier, I probably would have had a controller. But by the time I bought it, I already had a multiplayer console in the Wii.
Yeah.
And I bought it, well, I was like told, I bought it like the week after I broke up with my girlfriend. So I was really looking for single player experiences at the time. So,
multiplayer? No way, man. I'm on the prowl now.
Yeah, it's kind of persisted in my mind as the single-player console in my apartment.
It's your safe place.
Yeah, so actually, in contrast, this week, after PlayStation Network went up, I decided that I wanted to play some PS3 game online, and which I don't think I'd ever actually done before, and I've had that for years.
We played Grand Theft Auto 4, or was that, no, was that on 360?
That was on 360.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. So I think this might have been the first time I actually played a multiplayer game over PSN.
Oh, Johnny.
But I got to, I know.
Absence,
I know,
makes the heart grow fonder.
Well, and a number of multi-platform games I have played online just on 360. I could have played them on PS3.
Yeah.
So anyway, I ended up getting to play through, I think, the majority of Portal 2 co-op with an RFN listener, Synaptic, who we met in Boston at PAX East. And we had a really good time playing through the game. I mean, I'd say we probably put like 3 hours into it. And the very first part of it, he'd already played with someone else. So we just skipped that and went to the second part. So actually, the first set of levels in co-op, I still haven't played. I need to find someone else to play those with.
Yeah, I might pick that up, Johnny. I mean, I will get it for sure for PS3, so...
The co-op stuff is really interesting. I mean, it definitely feels like it is a different game than the single player campaign. I mean, all the levels are completely different. You can only play them in co-op. And it makes sense because the nature of these puzzles is such that I don't know if you could actually complete any of these puzzles without a second player. They're much more complex and just more difficult, I think, than the single player. So, I mean, I think, for one thing, I do think Portal 2 has caught a lot of unfair shit from people who say it's too easy. You know, I guess there's a lot of subjectivity in that. It depends on how good you are at solving these puzzles. For me, actually, my spatial reasoning isn't that great. It's okay, but it's not spectacular. I do better intellectually in some other ways. And so spatial reasoning, which is exactly what you're doing in Portal 2, is actually challenging for me. And I found the single player campaign to be fairly challenging. I never really got stuck, but I didn't want to get stuck. There were a number of puzzles that took me a long time to think through. And as I mentioned before, there were some that I actually had a friend over and we thought through them together, which was great. But I also think it's just that Portal 2, the solo campaign doesn't kill you nearly as much as the first one did, because they've taken out almost all the turrets, which are the little robots that shoot at you. And they killed you a lot in the first game. And they just pretty much got rid of those. You know, they gave you new challenges. They also took away pretty much all the moving platforms over spike pits and pits of fire, which there were quite a few of in the first Portal.
Yeah.
So I don't think Portal 2 is easier than the first one. I think you just die less often because the puzzles are different. They're just different kinds of elements that they're mixing in there. But in the co-op, Man, I mean, the interesting thing is they're still trying to sort of tell a story. It's a very subtle way, but certainly GLaDOS is still talking to you. She's saying things. She seems to be revealing little small tidbits about the world and the history of this place. And she's talking about your little robot characters that you're controlling. The trouble is, I found it was hard to actually pay attention to her because we're playing co-op. You know, so we're talking to each other as well. And I think it makes an interesting philosophical case in that it may be difficult to design a narrative-driven co-op game because the two players cooperating with each other are sort of creating their own narrative as they play through it. They're having their own conversations about the game. And certainly you're not probably not talking about anything else. I mean, you're not shooting the shit over the last week's baseball game while you play Portal 2. It requires a ton of strategic thinking, cooperation, planning. Hey, you go here, I'll go here. Mm-hmm. And they do a nice job of giving you tools. Like you can actually hold down the triangle button and look through the other person's eyes in a picture in picture, which is really cool. Helpful sometimes. So it's like, I don't even know where you are here. I'm just going to look at what you're looking at. And, you know, like any other, like in an actual first person shooter, you would never want that, you know, cause you're competing against each other. But in this game, it really helps. You can also lay down markers for each other and things like that. That's sometimes helpful, but, these puzzles are really tough and they're really complicated. And a lot of them we got through and we're just like, wow, I can't believe they actually wanted us to do that. Because you now have four portals instead of just two. So you can do really, it just bends your mind in ways that could never happen in the single player, you know? So you actually have to think about these environments in a different way than you did even in the campaign mode. It's really interesting. I had a really good time with it, and I hopefully will get to go back before too much longer and play the rest of it. So shout out to Dave. He's good at the game. I think he was a good partner for me because I think we're kind of similar in our level of skill on that game, you know? So it was nice. And we were playing the content together for the first time. So it wasn't like one person was holding the other one's hand, which really wouldn't be very much fun at all. Mm-hmm. You want to struggle together against the game and conquer it together. And that's what's fun about it, you know?
Now, is there any, once you actually beat the game, is there any incentive to go back and replay it really because you've seen all the puzzles?
Potentially, yes. So in the solo campaign, there is a developer commentary mode. Mm-hmm. So you can go through there and they have these, they look like speech bubbles that are just kind of floating around. And as you play through the game, you can go up and activate those and you'll get these sometimes very extensive comments from different members of the development staff explaining sometimes in amazing detail how this room came to look like it does or how they designed this puzzle. And there's a lot of stuff, you know, we originally started this room having this thing over here, but we did a lot of testing and found that no one could solve it, you know? And so it's a really interesting look at behind the scenes of how this was actually made and the very intensive work that goes into tailoring these levels so that they're just perfect. And also, you know, writing the backstory of the game, creating the art style of it. I mean, if you're interested in how games are made, you're not going to find a much better feature than this. It's amazing. And, you know, and also it's a good excuse to just play through the game again. And I think the thing is, it's a long enough game, especially when you include the co-op stuff, that you're going to forget how all these puzzles were done. There's just too many of them to remember how to solve every single one.
Yeah.
So there's some element of like rediscovering how you did it the first time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of nice too, but you can also do it while you listen to this fascinating developer commentary.
Yep.
But that's going to do it for new business. So now we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got a very special preview for E3 2011.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We begin this week with a barrage of reviews. First of all, we have Nintendogs Plus Cats from Andy Gergen, and then Lego Battles Ninjago from Andrew.
I think that's Ninjago.
And MDK2, the WiiWare version from Jared, and that actually includes a video review as well as the text.
Yeah, and Jared's a professional video producer, and that video review is very nicely done. It's most definitely worth checking out.
Jared makes good videos. We also have another review of a game I just recently disparaged about 25 minutes ago, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Shadow Wars from Neil. And we also have something really boring that'll probably end in a 1-1 tie, a FIFA 12 3DS interview with the producer, Matt Pryor.
You see, I would try and debunk that claim about football, but I watched the last World Cup. I can't really. I've got nothing.
All right, and on the impression front, we have impressions of Cave Story 3D from Aaron and Xenoblade impressions from Danny.
All right, well, we also have impressions of Escape Vector Chapter 1 from Aaron. And, of course, I have to mention the developer is No!
All your notebooks paid for this game.
Okay, we also have a feature, A Legacy of Personality. Pedro writes about Zelda characters.
Yeah, it's like the... like the history of characters in Zelda.
Pedro and a very few cool members of the staff have picked characters, not usually characters on the top tier of Zelda characters, but more obscure ones, like the hand that comes out of the toilet in Majora's Mask, and other such random individuals whom you probably don't remember.
All right, we also have a feature from Nick, Extra Life on Mario Kart Super Circuit, one of my personal favorite Game Boy games, or Game Boy Advance games. He tells it all.
Yes.
He talks about a game.
So we have a guest editorial from Aaron Edwards, a contributor to the site. It's called 9 Things Nintendo Needs to Do with Wii 2. So it's kind of a preview of the big Project Cafe unveiling at E3. And you can go over there and see what Aaron Edwards thinks Nintendo needs to bring to the table this E3. We might have our own thoughts on that coming up very soon. And finally, Neil wrote an interesting feature called Street Passing in North America, where he takes a hard look at the actual efficacy of street passing in North America, mm-hmm. which is kind of an interesting topic.
Actually, we have one more feature, the Poke Marathon Parade, from our Australian correspondent Andrew Brown and Pedro Hernandez, at which point they write about all of the Pokemon movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They are braver men than I.
Yeah,
they
sure
went and watched them and then gave write-ups on them.
And believe it or not, there are actually a few blog posts and features that I didn't even have time to squeeze into Now Playing this week. We've had so much content up at the website. Plus, tons of news, a lot of pre-E3 announcements and things like that. You really should get over to NintendoWorldReport.com and check it all out. And we're back. It's time for our annual, more or less annual, E3 preview coverage feature. And Greg was very kind to help put this together. I've had an insane week. I just started a new job, and Mike's here visiting. So Greg really helped me out by putting together one of these great feature note guides, as only he can do. And so I'm going to ask Greg to guide us through this discussion.
Yep, so this is the fourth year that we're doing one of these, E3 preview. So it is an annual event now, although the actual dates move around a bit. But this year it's going to be Tuesday, June the 7th, 9 a.m. Pacific, bright and early. Reggie's going to be getting on stage and delivering the good news, first of all, I guess, with the whole
gospel according to Reggie.
The 3DS update, with having gone live sort of hours beforehand, basically, around the world, but in America as well. So I wanted to start with 3DS and how they're going to sort of handle that. And the big umbrella topic over everything that to do with 3DS when they talk about it is going to be it's performed somewhat below expectations in terms of for their projections, just for that brief window at the end of the fiscal year. They fell about 10% short, and it seems like sales have been pretty weak after that period. So they will have to, having, you know, confessed that it's not lived up to everything they'd hoped for it so far, they're going to have to address that issue in the presentation. And so the first thing that we're going to look at is the kinds of games that, first of all, the ones that we know about. So we've got things like Super Mario that was revealed at GDC. We've got Animal Crossing. We've got Mario Kart. We've got Paper Mario, presumably other things named Mario. Want to open it up to anyone who thinks, yeah, what is going to be the game that they emphasize the most out of any of those?
I would say the Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah.
They've talked about it way more than any of the others, even more than Zelda, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they bring up situations to mention it where it doesn't even make sense. But we know it's a 2011 game, or they hope to make it a 2011
game. Yeah, Miyamoto has said that he hopes to get it out for 2011.
So we'll see it in 2013.
Miyamoto hopes to get Skyward Sword out this year.
Yeah. Miyamoto hopes to get Skyward Sword out
last
year.
Well, I mean, one thing I would say is that, because you could look at it from the point of view of EAD Tokyo, you know, they made Galaxy 2, and that only came out like a year ago. Doesn't this seem a bit sudden? But we do know that Galaxy 2 was basically finished sometime before that.
For like a year.
There was some spacing that was applied because New Super Mario Bros. Wii, which was developed elsewhere, obviously came out in the holiday of 2009. So they wanted to put a bit of distance. So it's, yeah, they will, if it is the end of the year, they will have had a couple of years to work on it. And of course, Galaxy 2 was building off very much what the first one was doing. So they could have had a bit of, you know, parallel development going on there with 3DS as well. So I think it's feasible that it could make it for the year. And it was actually, I predicted that they would have a Mario game for the big holiday title on 3DS. And it would certainly seem like the kind of thing to sort of allay concerns that there isn't, you know, a real, as they talked about at GDC, something with quote unquote must have.
Yeah, I think they need either this or Mario Kart.
Those are the two flagship.
I actually expect them to have both, but
yeah, so do I.
Both in the same holiday season?
I'm thinking one October, one late November.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
I think Mario Kart definitely this year.
I'm not sure about that. I would say that the Mario game is probably Mario Galaxy or Mario 3D game is probably more sensitive to holiday release than Mario Kart. Mario Kart was definitely perennial on the DS. So
that is true. Mario Kart is more mainstream. Like, that's for sure.
March or April of next year, I think it would still sell gangbusters for a long time.
Well, of course, Mario Kart Wii was a, you know, March, April release. But then again, DS was a fall release. So you've got it's worked in both cases.
Yeah.
See, the reason I think they want to have Mario Kart out by the holiday is that Galaxy and Galaxy 2 weren't gigantic, huge monster hits.
Big sellers, but not in the same order as Mario Kart.
Yeah, Mario Kart definitely. I mean,
it could move systems.
I'm actually really surprised at how huge Mario Kart has become as a franchise. It's actually moved past Mario.
It's blue shelled its way to the front, is what you're
talking about. Yeah, it's actually interesting. I mean, I think of where it started on the SNES, where it was kind of like, you know, just kind of a cool little kind of Mario spinoff title. I mean, now, holy crap, it's being packed in with the Wii.
I mean, they might do, if the 3DS sales don't improve, I could see them doing a 3DS Mario Kart pack-in release around Christmas time just to move 3DS.
Well, I mean, there's certainly a question of, you know, whether you could create some bundles or, I mean, what about different colors? I mean, is that possible by holiday?
I think it is
possible.
You
want something more than blue and black?
Yeah. I think different colors is very possible for this year because they're not supply constrained the way they were with Wii. I mean, Iwata, you know, and Reggie too, back in, let's say, 2007, were quoted as saying that they couldn't really spare the manufacturing capacity to make different colors of the Wii because they couldn't keep the white ones on the shelf. And when Wii sales finally slowed down a little bit, they were able to introduce other colors. I think with the way 3DS is selling now, they're filling up their warehouses in the next few months, and I think Nintendo knows that having different colors is more important for a handheld system than it is for a console.
Right, because it's got a little bit of an accessory vibe to it.
Yep.
Well, certainly. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the original DS, I mean, when I bought my original DS, it was when they'd introduced the new blue color in North America, and that was 6 or 7 months after it originally came out. So
yeah,
certainly by the end of the year seems feasible in that regard. But just go back to the whole holiday issue. I mean, does anyone think that because it's somewhat underperformed that they might be more eager to put like two, you know, really big guns like Mario Kart and Super Mario together in a holiday season?
If their resources aren't constrained, I mean, I don't know how long they've been working on some of their games. It's kind of I would hope that they've been working on these for a while. They have nothing serious for launch, and they've certainly had development kits for 3DS for a while. So what the hell are they working on?
Yeah.
I honestly believe that Mario Kart is probably pretty close to done, if not done already.
It could be.
They showed Mario Kart last E3.
But remember,
it was a demo.
They didn't show. I mean,
it was just eyes on, as it were.
Right. Yeah. But it was less of a demo than, say, Ridge Racer. It was just a video.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, it looked like video of somebody playing a done game. It didn't look like B-reel they put together.
It didn't look like a mock-up.
No. So, honestly, that game is probably in the can, as it were, or close to it.
You know, I think it makes sense to have Mario Kart out first because that's going to be a big carrier for the online and the Street Pass features that they really do want to promote.
That's kind of where I am. I could see them putting it out to maybe even 3 months before and then hitting Mario right before the holiday comes around.
You know, I'm thinking that some of the stuff like the Netflix and things like that might start pushing more 3DS units, especially if they can do some like 3D video streaming or something. That could be a really cool novelty.
They're not going to do 3D video streaming through Netflix.
No, but they are going to do 3D video streaming.
Netflix is not going to go to the very extreme cost of licensing 3D content just for one platform.
No, but Netflix won't, but Nintendo is going to be streaming 3D video.
Yeah, but it'll mainly be video of 3DS games.
Yeah, I know. But there are 3D content providers who desperately want to try to convince you to buy the upgraded cable packages, so I could see providing some sample content. ESPN is desperately trying to get you to buy that premium 3D package because they're the only ones on it, meaning they get the big license fee.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there'll be a few small things like that, but that nobody's going to buy it because of some kind of video delivery system.
Well, especially since phones have Netflix.
But
too.
What about, I mean, obviously we touched on this a little bit already with digital. In general, you know, the eShop would have just gone up, and so it's going to be very topical.
Literally just gone up.
It's going to be very topical at that point. And so how big a part, I mean, you know, given that they've got this sales kind of issue, they're going to want to reassure everyone that the second half of the year is going to be lights out with the big retail games. Does the eShop still, by virtue of being topical, get a big part of the presentation and the emphasis with, you know, what they're doing with Virtual Console, 3DSware, 3D Classics, etc.?
I think it depends on what they have ready at the launch of the system. I think if there's a bunch of stuff in the shop that moment, I think they talk about it more when they do their successes at the start of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's still pretty barren, they're going to talk about it in their future plans. So I think we'll know how the tone is when we're checking it at 11 o'clock at night the day before going, oh, crap, all that's in here is that Mega Man Legends demo.
I don't think that it's going to be a big deal. I don't think they're not going to really focus on that because they're going to have a lot of new big 3DS titles. They're going to have a new system to talk about. And, sure. And they've already had previous events where they've shown off a lot of like the Virtual Console type stuff.
But they've not actually shown any of the interfaces for the system. I mean,
no.
It's... We literally know nothing about it besides what
it does.
But then,
you know, how much patience do you think that they might afford the audience for something that is out there? You know, I mean, it'd be very fresh, you know, but a lot of people wouldn't have seen it, but it is out there. You could just look at it yourself on your own time.
That's the thing. They're going to mention that it's out now, but Nintendo typically, and I've been to many of these, and Nintendo almost never spends time talking about something that's already out. They will talk about Zelda because it'll be out in like a week after that or 2 weeks after.
Yeah, the 3DS Zelda, yeah.
Yeah, for Ocarina. But they're not going to talk about Steel Diver, and I don't think they're going to talk that much about eShop because... They're not going to commit to announcing a bunch of stuff for the eShop that's not out yet.
I think it's going to get more than a little tacit mention.
Well, what if there's something further that they can add? You know, I mean, it could be, I mean, on a smaller scale, they could confirm some other formats for the Virtual Console, yeah, GBA or something. But then other parts of 3D Classics or 3DS where something just gives it sort of an excuse to actually talk about it again. Anything in that area?
I think they're going to show a slide with a bunch of logos of games that they want to bring to the service, but the problem is with eShop rolling out like 6 hours before the press conference or whatever it is, 12 hours.
Yeah, it's dumb.
The problem is that for one thing, it's already out. And for another thing, they don't want to talk too much about the future of that platform because they still need to fulfill on the present of it. So yeah. They've got, I mean, for Virtual Console, let's say they launch with two games, which they might not even do that much. It might be one game from Nintendo. It doesn't make sense to start announcing a bunch of new platforms for that service when they haven't actually populated at all the ones that they've already announced.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to say, look, it's finally out. Turn on your 3DS after the press conference and check it out for yourself. Here's some of the stuff that we put out on it. Here's maybe one 3DSware game that's coming out next month. And I think that's about what they're going to say.
Yeah, I think they're going to show Mario Kart, they're going to show the new Mario game, and then they're probably going to feature a couple of high-profile third-party 3DS games. Because there aren't really any high-profile 3DS stuff out yet. There's some stuff coming out soon. There's some fighting games that are prominent, but I think there's a lot more that's in the works.
There's a ton of announced 3DS games that we haven't seen anything about.
Well, that's a good point, because we're used to Nintendo at recent press conferences at E3 announcing things that we didn't know about at all before, and it's out in 6 months. Is there any room for that on 3DS, given that we've got, you know, some of these big guns coming?
But we haven't seen anything about these games either. I mean, like we haven't really seen Metal Gear Solid 3D since E3 last year.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they have somebody from the project, probably Kojima, come out on stage and say, here it is.
Yeah.
Look at what it can do.
That game looks really impressive on the 3DS. I don't know that you get that much out of showing it up on the big screen.
They showed it on the big screen last year. I mean,
very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was part of a big like montage, you know, and going through all these IPs that the third parties are bringing over. It's difficult. I mean, if you're talking about, so like last year, you had Epic Mickey and Warren Spector, and they're like, you're quite extended period talking about that on Wii. So it's tough
quite
to do that.
Extended.
It's tough to do that with 3DS, I guess, you know, from the point of view that, you know, anything that you would linger on for so long is going to be kind of like, yeah, but, you know, we're not really seeing it, are we?
Yeah.
That's just a general problem that they have. Obviously, last year, they didn't have so much because it was unveiling the whole system, and they had that novelty video with Reggie of getting burned by Bowser
yes,
or whatever. You
and
know,
then
that,
a lot of laughing.
That, you can't really pull that trick again.
Well,
can
and
you?
they had very few demos at last year's E3 that you could really show for more than about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That was a big problem for 3DS last year. I mean, it looked cool, but it was all so bite-sized.
I mean, there were about 20 games in that slideshow they had that we've never seen anything but a logo for.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some of them may not exist anymore. But, I mean, show Kid Icarus. I think they'll show something like Animal Crossing that's, you know, that people understand and that it doesn't have to look super hot.
Animal Crossing is something that's, I mean, on the basis of DS sales, should be absolutely massive in Japan. But yeah. I wouldn't expect to see it spend a whole lot of time on for the Western audience for E3, even though, I mean, obviously City Folk in 2008 had quite a big showing, but people didn't seem to take that very well either. No,
they had some backlash from City Folk.
Yeah, so can we agree, I guess, because of the fact that 3DS is new on the market and because it's, you know, it's had a bit of a soft landing, that this will be the biggest single part in terms of time, maybe, of the presentation?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think they're going to have a lot to show for the Project Cafe just yet. I think they'll do big dramatics for unveiling it, but I doubt there's going to be a ton of games ready because the system's not coming out for over a year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they'll definitely take this chance to kind of expose it to especially the mainstream media.
Well, I mean, it's going to be playable on the show floor, so they have to have something.
They better have something that actually warrants whatever they've got up their sleeve. This can't, I mean, the 3DS is all well and good, and it's a neat novelty. There weren't any games that really said, this is why you need to do that. With the Wii, they were able to do that. It was a brand new controller, a bunch of games on the demo floor. They're like, oh yeah, this is really cool, you know? Mm-hmm. They got to do that for the next Nintendo system, Project Cafe, whatever they call it.
They'll have Miyamoto out there playing it and talking about it Bill Trennan. I'm telling you right now, what will happen.
But I mean, they're going to have another E3 to show this thing off playable.
It is possible it could come out in April or May next year.
It's not going to come out in April or May next year.
It is possible.
Yeah, it's possible from the point of view they've said that it's not going to be coming out in the fiscal year that ends
right.
in
but
March 2012.
You have to remember, and this is a blanket policy, and there are many exceptions I could point to over the years, but as a general policy, Nintendo only shows things at E3 that they expect to come out before the next E3. So they don't show games, they don't intentionally show games 3 years in advance like some companies do.
But see, I think in this case, though, they're kind of in a situation where they need to allay investor fears, too. I mean,
yes.
They're not in the great situation they were in, say, a few years ago. So they might feel like they have to show this now.
The worst thing they can do is show something without a good killer app to back it up.
Yeah.
Well, before we kind of go completely off of it, I think we're going to save the full discussion of the next console for the end of this segment, much as I presume Nintendo will save it for the end of their press briefing.
Yeah.
So before we get all futuristic with that, I do want to mention the systems that, you know, are in so many homes already with Wii and DS, in terms of, you know, you would think that there's still a big, you know, a significant role, let's say, for the established platform. So the first thing I guess we need to get out of the way is Zelda. So they've still got to talk about it. I assume they're going to tell us when it's going to come out. But beyond that, is it going to be a big part of the of the show?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
I think Zelda Skyward Sword will be the single biggest game at the press conference. It's the one they will spend the most time on because they had a troubled showing of it last year.
Yes.
And it's been delayed heavily. I mean, last year...
It's a full year delayed.
Yeah, I mean, last year, many of us thought it would be coming out by Christmas. And then, and then Miyamoto says, I'm sorry, but we may not make it out before the end of the year. And that's literally the last time they said anything about when that game's coming out.
Well, yeah, because they were in the process of tweaking the graphics or something completely asinine.
Yeah, so the game's done, but the graphics aren't.
I was looking at that game and E3 going, this game is not done.
Other than that video they showed at GDC, they've gone really dark on this game. It's a big game. It's a Zelda game. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to show. There's a lot that we don't know about it. And I think Nintendo feels very strongly that they need to redeem that game in the eyes of a lot of people. And they've done it before. They've done it with Zelda before. So they're totally capable of turning people's opinion around on this. I don't know if they're going to try to do a playable run through like they did last year, because
I think
they had technical problems and it's always a danger. So I think it might just be a video and maybe someone talking about it.
See, I think with the Motion Plus integration, it almost has to be a playable visual demo of someone playing the game so you can see the controls mapping.
Well, it'll certainly, well, then maybe they'll show a video on the projector of someone playing it.
Awful.
Or they might have someone behind the stage in a lead box playing it and a video camera on them, so they have like a picture in picture.
That's awful.
But anyway, I don't think they're going to try to repeat the same setup that they had last year, because it obviously didn't work very well for them. And the thing is, if you played the game on the floor last year, it was fine. And they're going to tell people, make sure you go play this for yourself, but they're going to show it off in the most impressive way that they can. And I think they'll spend a lot of time on it, because if Skyward Sword doesn't sell this holiday season, they're in bad shape financially. They need this to be a huge hit, and they need to get people excited for it. And I don't think people are all that excited for Skyward Sword right now, because we haven't heard about it in a long time. And the last time we saw it, there was sort of a negative cloud around it.
Mm-hmm. And it was still, I suppose, that particular slice of the game was something they'd put together, especially just as a little playground for all the items that they had working and the Motion Plus sort of functionality that went along with that. So you still, apart from passing glimpses in trailers like the GDC one, have seen very little of the game. Back when they were doing the Wii demos and stuff, you could play through like the whole Goron Mines dungeon, couldn't you, or something? I'm sure there's going to be some pretty big sections of the game that they'll be able to go through now and kind of really demonstrate to people, what it is about, in a way. I don't think people, even now, other than just it's Zelda with Motion Plus, have a very strong sense of what the game is about.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't really been anything put out there that's been really impactful, like, wow, that's amazing kind of thing. It's just been, okay, it's Zelda, we get it, we kind of know how the game plays, and we know that, the graphics have been tweaked a bit, Motion Plus.
It's too high concept right now.
I thought when you played it and you actually got to see how the Motion Plus kind of fit into puzzles, it kind of was like that. You kind of were, wow.
But that's the thing, though. Think about it. Like, I haven't played it, right? I have yet to play it. So from my perspective, it's Zelda. It looks like it looks like Twilight Princess a little bit. The graphics are a little bit different. Like, there hasn't been anything said to me or shown to me that to indicate that it's really anything too... that's leaps and bounds beyond what's already been done in Twilight Princess.
And see, I think that's kind of why they need someone to actually play it there, because the wider media, the general media, they're probably not going to play it on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them will come do their, look at this crazy expo with all these crazy games, and then, that's about as deep as they go.
Yeah.
And if they can at least... if it catches their eye, maybe they will stop and play it at that point and talk about it. I mean, obviously, their goal is to get people to talk about games.
Regardless, it will be the bell of the ball.
Well, and has anyone sort of revised their opinion of when the game is going to be coming out and therefore how the E3 presentation might reflect that?
Well, I'm not going to be contrarian to push it to 2013, but I think, it's got to be late year. I think at this point, in my mind, it's sort of the parallel Wii game for whichever Mario game Nintendo tries to release last for the 3DS this year.
It's like November 21st or whatever that...
So that's a bit later than we thought at the beginning of the year. I know the three of us, other than James, when we did our predictions, we had it coming, you know, maybe sort of late summer kind of time.
Yeah, but they haven't said a word about it.
Yeah, I mean, this, apart from the GDC trailer, there really hasn't been any kind of forward momentum on it. And also, I would say that Ocarina for 3DS is coming out a bit later than we might have thought in the middle of June. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, we thought that'd be coming closer to the launch of the system. Given that, you know, spacing, again, you kind of, we talked about New Super Mario Bros. Wii and the Galaxy 2 is coming into play. And so it does seem more likely that it's going to be in that holiday kind of window.
Yeah, also, Dragon Quest X has been officially moved out of 2012, correct?
Out of 2011. It's been moved into next year.
But given that Zelda is going to get, you know, if it does get all this emphasis and all, and we've got 3DS on the one hand, and we've got the new system at the back end of the presentation, is there really going to be enough time and sort of bandwidth to think about any kind of unannounced weird DS games that, or maybe like localizations of games that are already out in Japan or on their way?
I think they'll mention it. I think they'll just like, okay, yeah, you know, Xenoblade will be coming out. For those of you waiting for Zelda, Xenoblade's coming out in September.
I remember last year, though, they had that essentially the hit reel they did for a little bit where they're like, bam, game, bam, game, bam, game.
They're not going to have enough games for the Wii this year.
But let's say they do both the Wii RPGs, which is ambitious.
Yeah.
But NOE is basically handling Xenoblade. So let's say they let NOE take care of Xenoblade and they take care of the last story.
I don't think we're getting both this year. I think we're going to get Xenoblade in, like Mike said, August or September. And I think Last Story, if we ever get it in the West, it'll be next year.
But see, the Last Story has so much more cachet than Xenoblade.
I think it looks less interesting. I mean, I know it's had good reviews, but it's less appealing to me than Xenoblade.
I mean, our one person on staff who's played both of them has been pretty direct in his statement that the Last Story is the superior game.
Well, also, Last Story came out more recently in Japan. We're talking about cachet. It's not about one man. I mean, we're talking about perceptions.
That's what I understand. But, I mean, the Last Story had a longer tail of when it was coming through. People were more interested in it earlier.
So it'd certainly be a lot for the market to bear, you know, the Wii RPG market to put two out in a short period of time.
If you put one out in the middle of the year and one out at the end of the year, is that really that much to bear?
But the problem is, you're already in the middle of the year. I mean, unless it's going to be Xenoblade coming out in 2 weeks,
it's a third quarter game in Europe, right?
Yes.
So,
yes,
I mean, it could be at the beginning of the third quarter. And
James, I know you're wishful thinking, but if you actually think both of those games are coming out in America this year, I think you're in happy fairy land. It's not happening.
Yeah.
I don't think that's impossible. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, I have a wild prediction, actually, in terms of RPGs. And since John brought it up, I just want to follow up and say that it's unlikely, but I think there is a small chance that we could actually see the debut of Dragon Quest X at E3 during the press conference.
I think they're more likely to save that for their own Dragon Quest press event, which is how they generally unveil these things.
Yeah. I know how they generally do it, but Square and Nintendo have both shown a pretty sincere interest in making this series more popular in America. And for Nintendo especially, it's such an ace. You know, it's such a big thing to pull out there. And if the game looks as good as we think it will look, you know, and if it is as grandiose, and they can back it up with sales numbers and all that stuff. Also, it's the 10th game in a series, so clearly it's a successful series. I think if they present it correctly, it wouldn't be... You know, it's not going to get as much time as Zelda. It would be a smaller part of the press conference. And I know that these games are typically shown first in Japan, but I think it's possible that they could do that and then follow up not too much longer after that with a more meaty reveal in Japan.
Square Enix is not going to show that game in anything less than it being the belle of the ball. To them, that game is like gigantic, and they would not settle for it to be unveiled in a tiny form.
I don't know. The thing is, in Japan, it doesn't really need any help on hype.
But it doesn't matter if it needs help or not. It's a prestige thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But given that Zelda is going to get, you know, a big platform, maybe we'll see a few things mentioned. Again, we talked about this last week. Could be just a press kit job for something like Rhythm Heaven, possibly, if they decide to bring that over again.
That's, That's press kit or bust, baby.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Possibly the DS Kirby game, the Gather! Exclamation point Kirby.
Yes.
But, you know, that, those are the kinds of things we'll probably see in a press kit. But is there anything, is there room, you know, for something to, you know, like a DKC Return style last year? You know,
Pikmin 3.
Pikmin 3? You think that's still on the cards?
That's totally been moved to the new system. I mean, the controller's practically designed for it.
Well, I think Pikmin 3 is possibly now a 3DS game, possibly now a Project Cafe game, possibly still a Wii game. Regardless, I think they have to show it this year at E3.
Really?
Have you worked this for the last three E3s?
It's just getting to the... It's just absurd at this point.
It is.
They have to show it.
It is, I agree.
No, they don't have to show anything. I mean,
what you're telling me is it's definitely not coming out on DS.
Well, it's certainly not coming out on the GBA, yes.
Here's a thought. I know it's a little off-topic, but do you think we'll see a Metroid game for 3DS?
No.
Probably not this year.
I don't think so.
I really think probably Metroid's probably getting mothballed for a while.
Yeah, I think they're taking that back to the drawing board, if not just scrapping it for a while, just because none of those games have really performed up to Nintendo standards.
Yeah, they clearly need to go back to the drawing board after Other M. And the thing is, Sakamoto would be involved to some extent, I'm sure, even if it was like a 2.5D platformer on 3DS, and he's making Rhythm Heaven for Wii right now, so...
Presumably some level of involvement there, yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's possible we could see like an early version of something from Retro Studios. I mean, I would imagine they're probably working on Project Cafe stuff, and so maybe whatever we see for that, they'll have a hand in it, you know, some early demo. But I do think we'll see something from Retro Studios this year. Even though it's not been that long since, you know, DKCR came out.
Yeah, but just last month, Retro was posting jobs for what looked like an entirely new development team. I mean, in terms of programming, art, management. So there's something in the works at Retro. There is a brand new project.
It's something that suggests, like, they're having to really upgrade what they can do.
Yeah,
to
Like, it looks like these are not people that were there already moving over to another project. This is a brand new project, a secondary project, if there was already something going on.
Like a project starting.
Look, clearly they're early in whatever they're doing. I mean, they just put out a game 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're going to have a game out this holiday season. But yeah. I do think we'll see something from them.
I think there'll be some sort of short video reel of something they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they threw something together for the Metroid 3.
That's right. Back in 2005, it was one of the only things.
I suspect they could throw something together for Project Cafe.
Right. There is no way, shape, or form it's imperative they show anything, because they've gone dark for years. I mean,
I didn't say it's imperative, but I think it would be very smart. To if you're trying to appeal to the quote-unquote hardcore quote-unquote audience.
Well, let's move into the new system in full force now. So back in 2005 was the last time we had a home console sort of revealed for the first time from Nintendo. And that obviously was very low on detail about what it was going to be. It was, you know, you had the system casing and a little Metroid Prime 3 teaser. You know, they didn't commit on the controller and all that kind of thing. And here we are again, presumably at least a year away from the system. But I mean, all the things we've been hearing suggest that it's going to be quite a different matter from what it was there. We will actually find out some really substantive things. So I guess the first thing I would ask is, given that it is still a long way away, do you think this is going to be more aimed at catching the attention of the kind of mainstream media, the broader media, or strictly like, look, you know, it's a long way away, but, you know, our gaming enthusiasts and people in the industry obviously have long memories about this kind of stuff, so we're putting down the marker now?
I think they're going to focus a little more on the gaming enthusiasts on this, I think, because some of the hype for the more mainstream audience, you got to do it a bit sooner. I think they probably will have another opportunity to appeal more to them.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like the half-life of these things in the mainstream media is so short that I'm not sure, you know, if you go out there and explain some of the things that the new system does that could create, you know, the next Wii Fit, it would be the most beneficial way of kind of revealing that. As has been Nintendo's general approach, to leave it late in the day before revealing these things. I mean, that's the thing for me personally. when I was talking about this in the prediction show, I didn't think we'd hear very much about the system at all. I flat out predicted that we wouldn't this year, but still, presuming that the system would come out in the second half of 2012, which, yeah, so far the indications are that that is the case, but it seems like there's so much stuff out there now, mainly from the third party side, that that's where all this is coming from. Do you think that's the big reason, is that they're sharing so much more that they've kind of having to play their hand?
Well, that's part of it, but also I think one thing that we haven't brought up yet is that one reason that Nintendo wants to show this system this year is to get developers interested in it. And not just that they're showing it to developers at E3, but they're showing it to everyone at E3 and getting everyone hyped up, just like they did for Wii back in 2006. And that led to a ton of developer interest in the Wii early on. Whereas, let's say 2008, when they clearly played up for the Today Show with the whole Wii Fit thing, that was almost the turning point where a lot of third parties stopped caring about the Wii, actually. So, you have to realize, the people who make games are largely the same as us, right? They have they're interested in the same kinds of games, they get excited about the same kinds of things. So, it's in Nintendo's interest, I think, to show the system in a way that makes everyone excited, everyone at E3, which is mostly hardcore gamers, because that will get the developers on board early.
Agreed. And given that if it doesn't come out for another year or year and a half, that gives developers enough time to actually develop something good at launch, or start adding it if they're doing the multi-platform development. They have plenty of time to add Project Cafe to that multi-platform development.
Especially since they can pretty much recycle a lot of their, apparently they'll be able to recycle a lot of their 360 development.
Yes.
I hope so. Mm-hmm.
I fully expect to see Portal 2 on the new system.
Well, so are we expecting, you know, Ubisoft to have an absolute...
Oh, God, they launch every system with
a
40
battery
ports.
Of
They were like half of the 3DS launch.
Yeah, there will be a Rayman game for Project Cafe, confirmed.
You know, there will be Rayman 2 for Project Cafe.
Yeah, what the hell?
But you'll play it entirely on the controller.
But I suppose the question is, will they have, though, somebody, you know, if they've been sharing information with third parties ahead of the presentation, or so certainly key
big
partners,
ones.
So, that's how we've been learning about this before.
Because they won't stop talking.
Presumably, some of the payback on that has got to be that, you know, they're going to have someone who they can bring on stage and say they're on board and they've got a new idea. Not just, you know, we're porting Assassin's Creed 4, or, you know, that we're getting up to now. So who is that most likely to be?
Rockstar. Every rumor we get coming out, even rumors that apparently aren't from Rockstar, from other publishers, seem to be that Rockstar has a game that Nintendo is very, very up on.
Well, Reggie's been going after that for a while.
I mean, other publishers are apparently talking about the fact that Rockstar has a game that Nintendo is up on.
And this would be separate? Could it be, you know, something that's completely exclusive, or would it be a special version of the next GTA?
Either it's exclusive or it's lead platform.
Maybe, it could go either way.
Maybe it's Rockstar working on a open world Pokemon game.
Yeah, it may not be what you would expect out of Rockstar. We'll have to see.
But the rumor it has its stance is that not only is Rockstar really, really excited for the project, but Nintendo is A, excited, B, motivated, and C, possibly using it to spur other developers.
I don't know. Maybe we'll see Modern Warfare 3.
Well, it'll be called Reflex Edition, but yes.
I think that's not too crazy.
If you cast your mind back to, you know, last year with the 3DS, and of course 3DS, you know, really did storm E3 that year, you know, brought the house down pretty well. That was the buzz. Everyone was talking about it, how, you know, it did so well. And part of that was they just listed off.
Right. They did that bang, 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 bang.
Publishers, developers, and IP. So it's like pretty much everything you got, including things that we are already dead, like Saints Row. You know. Mm-hmm. But do you think with the new system, even though it's even further away from becoming a reality, that they'll be able to do something similar?
I think they probably really only worked really intently with the big publishers right now. So I would say maybe they'll say, we've got games coming from this company, and this company, and that's it. Because they'll probably list all the companies they've worked with after 4.
Well, there certainly will be some kind of developer reel, whether it's live on the stage or a video like last year with 3DS, of people talking about how amazing the technology is and, you know, how excited they are. That I think you'll see more of people talking about the new system than you will see of actual games on or demos
right,
on the system.
They're, at most, I would say they're probably 6 months in development.
Yeah. At the very high end.
Of course, this has a challenge in some way similar to 3DS, but in a sense very different. Because, of course, last year you had the issue of, well, the 3DS is 3D without glasses, but as we're presenting this to you, you can't see that yet. But on the other hand, you know, with this new system, at least, you know, taking it as given that the one of the big things is the controller having a screen in it and everything, it's going to be difficult to convey how that enhances gameplay, again, without getting it in people's hands. And you're having sort of playable demonstrations on the show floor rather than, you know, last year there was a lot of 3DS stuff that was eyes on. And it's like, well, you know, it's just a video of Kid Icarus, for instance, but I can see it and it's in 3D. So that's something. Whereas, right. You know, really, if it's about the controller again, I mean, you have to play this to have any grasp of what makes it unique and progressive. Yeah, they've already said it's going to be playable. Yes, I mean, that is known. Yeah, but what is going to be playable? Are we going to be talking about tech demo stuff that may never grow into a game like...
Like Steel Diver?
No, that unfortunately did grow into a game.
That will grow into a game 7 years hence, perhaps, but not, you know, next year. Or could we actually see, you know, a quote-unquote real game? You know, maybe the biggest suspect might be something like Pikmin that has perhaps been bumped from one system to another.
Right.
Right.
They have to show something. They have to show a real game. Otherwise, people just say, what's the point? I mean, Tactimo is just not going
to
cut it.
The reason why Pikmin has to be dead as a Wii game is that it would work so well to illustrate ways you can use a touchscreen in your game. It seems almost destined to be a 3DS where they could literally pretty much port their Wii development over, or a cafe game where they could just upport. I mean, it seems like those two platforms are so much better suited than the Wii is.
Well, I think Pikmin has a double whammy, if we're talking cafe here, of the interface. I'm sure you could do plenty of interesting things that would make a lot of sense with the screen and the control and all that. But also the graphical detail. It's a rare Nintendo game that has an established aesthetic that would be obviously enhanced by high definition and superior horsepower.
I don't disagree with anything you guys have said, but I don't think Pikmin 3 works as the marquee title of a system that comes out in possibly 18 months later.
Marquee, no, but yeah. I think I could very well see it as one of the things in the portfolio.
Yes.
I could see it being one of two games that they show, and then a bunch of... See, to me, the most impressive, maybe not impressive, but the most capturing tech demo of the 3DS at E3 last year, and not even everybody saw it because it didn't have a kiosk, and it obviously was never going to be a game, but it did things and proved the point better than any game that's come out to date. That was the cat game.
The Pogo Cat.
Yeah. I mean, that game really showed that you can do things in 3D that you cannot in 2D. And, I mean, it was obviously a tech demo, but to me, when I came away from playing that game, I said, oh, you really can build a game around 3D.
So you think things like that, expect them applied to screen and the controller, that kind of...
Like, it's a gameplay concept, but a full game hasn't been built on it.
Yeah, well, there may very well be stuff like this, but put yourself in Nintendo's shoes. They have to show something that you will stay excited about for over a year, okay?
Yeah.
Without getting another chance to play it, most likely. So it's going to be something that will really... that captures something in your mind like Kid Icarus did last year. And Kid Icarus, I don't even think it's going to turn out to be that good of a game.
Yeah.
But it is something that everyone knows what it is, and it was very easy to say... 3DS has Kid Icarus because nothing else in recent memory has Kid Icarus. So it immediately becomes identified with that system.
And with good reason.
And it's pretty, and you can show a video of it, and people understand it, and they get excited about it. I don't think Pikmin 3 is that kind of a game, and I certainly don't think fucking Pogo Cat is that kind of a game. So they're going to have to show something that you will identify with this system, whether it's an established franchise or not, something that will stay on people's minds and tongues for a whole year.
Casting our minds back to previous system reveals, I think of the GameCube, you know, and I think of stuff like the famous Zelda, what was actually the Smash Brothers character models fighting each other of Link and Ganondorf, and like Donkey Kong Racing.
Luigi's Mansion was huge.
It was.
Yeah.
Huge.
These kinds of things, but at the time, those were pretty close to cutting edge visually. I mean, you know, they were to some extent they were kind of mocked up and
all. They were also CG.
Yeah,
it was a bit of bullshittery going on, but it was indicative of what the GameCube was capable of. But I mean, is that really the sort of thing that you can do and expect to have an impact from if you're doing it for a system that's broadly in line with ones that have already been on the market for 5 years?
Not in this day and age, and not when the controller is a huge part of the identity of the system.
Yeah, so it's got to be playable. And the question is then, you know, given that 3DS, you know, supposedly they wanted it out for the end of the last calendar year as opposed to the fiscal year, but they couldn't manage that. And even then, 3 months hence, the software lineup was sparse.
And the operating system wasn't done.
And there was very little playable last year. And then this new console is even further away than that was from its launch. I mean, why should we expect that they have this playable stuff?
Is it simply
a question that it is so imperative that they will actually have allocated the resources to make it possible?
Well, and here's the truth. Last year at E3, Nintendo could have shown more of 3DS games than they did. They wanted to show breadth, not depth. And they knew that people wouldn't have a chance because of the lines and the way it was all set up and everything. They knew that people weren't going to have a chance to play through a 10-minute demo, so they didn't offer any. But they could have. Some of those games, they could have done a 10-15-minute demo.
They could have let you play Rayman 3D in full.
No, there were a number of things, you know, and some of those games were playable, and some of them could have been playable, they just didn't let you. So it's not that those games were not far along. You don't half-ass a showing of 30 to 40 demos on a system. Some of those are going to be much farther along than others. But you notice they were all about 60 seconds long, which means they were cutting a lot of them short.
Well, one thing that you know, intrigues me is the fact that, you know, if you could commit yourself, it seems that they have and they need to playable software. We're used to them keeping a few hardware features sort of unknown, and, you know, given that there is a long lead time, you would kind of expect that they will have more to reveal later on. But, you know, how much can you do that when you're demoing these games already? You know, are they going to be able to preserve a kind of sense of mystery of like...
I think there's a lot they can show later. Like, as they mature their online interface, if they have a much better online interface, they can have a huge blowout of guess what? All these like Xbox Live-esque features. Yeah, yay.
Services. Services is the key word. That's the kind of thing you can roll out much later.
The thing, that's not something they can lord over their competitors.
No, but they can get people excited about it. Like, look, we're actually doing this stuff. And it will excite people, especially if it's something like a Pokemon game or something like that, where it's like, oh my god, I've always wanted this stuff with a Nintendo game, and now we can maybe get it, like voice chat. Speak.
No voice chat. Voice chat.
Now the Wii Speak is built into the controller.
Right, yeah.
But it still picks up the whole room.
Oh lord.
No, it does seem like it's a long time for them to have, you know, a situation where they're going to blow it out, apparently, you know, it's going to be playable, you're going to see the controller, you're going to see all this stuff, and then it's going to be, let's all go back in the mothballs, think about Skyward Sword for the next 6 months, and then goodness knows what else for the 6 months after that, before we actually get back around to talking about the
new
console.
Here's the problem, if they show it at TGS, they almost run the risk of hurting Skyward Sword.
The timing, you probably wouldn't be that exquisite there, because that would be in like September.
Right.
Yeah.
But logically, it would make sense for them to show it at TGS and do more blowout show.
Whoa, Nintendo doesn't show things at TGS.
Yeah, but they could show things alongside it.
Yeah, I mean, they'll do keynotes and they'll talk about stuff, and I mean...
They showed the Wii at TGS in 2006.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not so much that they're literally going to have games on the show floor
of
TGS.
But they show stuff. They show stuff in conjunction with TGS.
Yes,
put it that
okay.
way.
Yes.
But the timing for them... is almost poison for Skyward Sword if they do that. If Skyward Sword is indeed coming out in the holiday.
Well, it might come out earlier in Japan.
Maybe, but September is pretty damn early.
Although the market dynamics with Zelda in Japan are very interesting after Spirit Tracks apparently, you know, was vastly oversupplied, ended up being sold for bargain. They're now saying that they're actually constraining the supply of Ocarina so that won't be repeated. Very Japanese thing. It was just embarrassing to have a marquee franchise like Zelda represented in the bargain bins.
Well, it goes back to that prestige thing we were talking about about with Dragon Quest X. I mean, yeah. it's a marquee brand. It has to get a prominent position on
display
cases.
It may come out first, but given the nature of its development, I think it would be simultaneous or possibly Western first.
Or maybe slightly skewed, like maybe like at most a month.
Well, one thing that's been sort of suggested in recent weeks is that there's a possibility that Microsoft might also announce in some fashion a successor console to the 360.
Nah.
A, do you think it's likely? And nope. B, if it were to happen, what would be the impact?
They seem to be slotting for 3 years down the road, so it's probably a little early right now.
Yeah, they seem to still have a lot of huge games coming out. They got Gears of War 3 coming out.
And moreover, look at the hardware sales, a year-on-year growth that they're achieving.
Microsoft is killing
it. No one else in the console realm is demonstrating that kind of growth.
Yeah. I mean, the company that needs to most announce it is probably right now it's a tie between Nintendo and Sony.
No, it's Nintendo. As I've said before, Microsoft and Sony do not want to sell you a new console.
Fine, but the point is, of those 360 is the least wanting to announce a new system.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because they are killing it.
I don't think we'll see anything from Sony or...
No, Sony's got a 30-minute apology session, probably.
Well, no, they have their new portable to talk about.
Yeah, that's right. So Sony have got, you know, a new system to talk about, the NGP. And that, you know, is worth mentioning from the point of view that, do you think that given that the 3DS has had this sort of soft landing, is there an opportunity there for Sony? Does Nintendo have anything to kind of fend off in that respect?
Not in terms of hardware sales, because NGP is going to be so expensive that it's going to have an even more difficult time selling.
Do you think it's going to be that expensive? Is it possible that they could be, Sony is in a less apt position to do this, given what's happened to their gaming division over the life of the PS3, but is it possible that they could make an aggressive move to sell something heavily subsidized?
I think the price of the 3DS makes it easier for Sony to not look like a holy shit expensive system.
So Sony could be super aggressive and sell it for $300, but that still doesn't compare all that favorably to 3DS on the market.
Well, it depends, though.
If 3DS could be coming up to price point cut soon after the...
next year.
The weakness I see right now with the 3DS is that I think the public at large, they don't really see what more it offers that the DS doesn't. Whereas the NGP could come in, you know, the NGP is going to be loaded with all kinds of engineering bullshit. So if Sony can sell it like, hey, we're only like $50 more, let's just say they do sell it $300. I think it's going to be more than that. But if they come in and say, hey, you know, this thing's only $300, but it does all of this other shit, which you know it will. I mean, right now, if you
we'll be lucky if it doesn't categorize what clothes
you're
wearing.
They tried that with PS3 and it didn't work over Xbox.
That's true.
PS3 wasn't that much more expensive than Xbox, but it did a lot more, and nobody cared.
True.
Well, and in the portable space, most people that would be interested in this already have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. And I think Sony's going to have trouble distinguishing whatever those super awesome features are from what people can already do on their smartphone. Look,
yeah, I think that they're already having that problem with the 3DS. I think Nintendo's already having that problem.
Both of these new portables are going to have a hard time selling as well as their predecessors did. And it's going to come down mainly to software. So what Nintendo has to do at this E3 is show that in the long term, in the short term, they obviously have the advantage because they're the only one out there. But in the long term, they have software that will get everyone excited.
They're going to get play is what they have to show.
And this is what happened with the DS. DS had a very softball launch.
Yes, I mean, this is the real thing. I mean, I think to some extent, the fact that Nintendo have come out and said, oh, it performed below our expectations, you know, has kind of shaped how people perceive the launch, you know, because, oh, well, you know, they're admitting it hasn't done as well as they would have hoped. So obviously it's gone poorly. But if you really look at it in a full context, first of all, yes, the original DS, like that was a really bad.
Well, and everybody thought they were going to get steamrolled by the PSP too. I mean,
yeah, that's that. But also, I mean, really, this is just the price they paid for getting it out in the fiscal year. They made a decision that mattered to them. And so I would certainly hope, even though it has performed below their expectations, that they were prepared for this eventuality because they took a decision of like, look, it matters more to us to have hardware on shelves by this date than it does to have a, you know, exquisitely spaced out software launch schedule following on from that.
Well, here's the trouble for Nintendo. Obviously, they've sold approximately 4 million 3DSs already, which is good. You know, that's a lot in a short period of time. The problem is that is, I mean, in terms of hardware sales, they've blown their load and they don't have much to sustain it that we know of. And that's what E3 is all about for them. They have to show that 3DS is going to be able to maintain some kind of prominence in the long term, you know, and they could do that easily by showing a couple of amazing games for the summer and the fall and the holiday season. But they have to do that. They really have to knock it out of the park, because the thing is, 3DS sales fell off a cliff after the launch, and they're not going back up with Zelda, and they're not going back up with Star Fox 64 3DS. So they've got to show that they can bring 3DS sales way back up. And holiday will do that to some extent naturally, but yeah. they've got to show that their software lineup is very aggressive, and that it's going, then that it's poised to make 3DS the kind of success that DS was. If they do that, then they have nothing to worry about from Sony.
You know, I just can't help but feel that, you know, with both 3DS and PSP / NGP, I kind of feel like they're fighting over a somewhat dying market.
In the sense of the premium value portable gaming experience?
Yeah, I just feel like the way things are going with smartphones, I feel like the market for strictly gaming handhelds is shrinking, because you get people on the fringe that might have bought a DS or might have bought a PSP who aren't really huge gamers but kind of want something to play on the go. Now they can just play Angry Birds on their iPhone. So I don't know. I feel just like, you know, just kind of stepping back, that this may be, you know, 10 years from now, there may be no more handheld.
Well, I don't believe that. I think what Johnny said earlier about that they'll struggle, specifically, you know, 3DS will struggle to sell what the DS did. Yep. I think is, you know, in part because of what you just said, because its potential may well be limited. And of course, they are moving to a more premium model. So it's essentially, well, perhaps they are accepting that they will sell to fewer people, but trying to extract more revenue from them.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think NGP games are going to cost $50?
I do. I would hope that they would be variable.
That's a tough sell.
Yeah.
I would hope that they wouldn't. If they do, nobody's going to buy them.
Do we think then that if we say, well, Sony's going to be unveiling a portable at this E3, but it's not necessarily going to be something Nintendo will be particularly worried about?
No, you know,
there's not going to be any kind of direct riposte to it.
Yeah.
What about the whole preserving the value of games? Iwata talked about it at GDC. Some people sort of agreed with it. You know, Dennis Dyack kind of recently came out and sort of supported what Iwata was saying about that. And other people have been very much on the other side.
I don't think I want Dyack support right now.
Is this an angle that they're going to go back to at E3 at all? In terms of, here is something that we have that demonstrates that our model works and will continue to work?
No, they'll just show Nintendo games that are good. And that's the biggest thing they always have going for them, is good Nintendo games. It's something Sony struggles with, is having good, unique software for their portable.
So that's enough.
Even dedicated software that's on the PSP feels a lot like what you can get on consoles, and so some people are like, well, what's the difference?
Well, let's think about, for instance, last year, everyone regarded Nintendo as having a very effective presentation. 3DS made a big impression. They had a whole range of established Nintendo properties they could list off as coming out very soon. You know, Golden Sun, Kirby, in addition to, you know, the Zeldas of the world and all that. So they did very well. I mean, do you think this year they could repeat that? When you've got, you know, 3DS really sort of coming to the fore with the big games that you actually want to play for it, and a new system?
Yeah. Sure. They almost always have a very strong showing at E3.
And with the big Zelda?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
That absolutely, be a strong showing. Whether that translates to, like, big sales when they actually come out is another story. But, yeah, I think they'll have a good E3 showing.
Nintendo's really good at capturing people's imagination at E3. They're really good at tapping into the hype, the gossip, the word on the floor, you know, they're really, really, really good at that, even with products that sometimes turn out to be not that enthralling later on, but that's what they do best. So I think Nintendo will win E3? Pretty much. Yep.
Yeah, they probably will.
As long as they don't go in there with Wii Music, they generally do.
I mean,
I think they have a certain amount of emotional connection, even to the most jaded attendee there, because as you said, they're all, or a great many of them are hardcore gamers, which means they did probably grow up with the Nintendo system.
Yeah, I think that people are the most curious about what Nintendo is going to do, and they're the most eager to see what they're going to do. I mean, Nintendo was always the company that surprises people.
But is there a risk, though, that given that there has been quite a lot of information already out there about the new system, that they could actually underwhelm from that point of view, that there isn't a great deal more that wasn't already strongly suggested?
I think the risk is actually less, because with the Wii, we had no clue, and the mock-ups were getting insane, and I think that was a much higher risk of underwhelming, because you could end up with something that's much less than what people were hoping for.
Yeah, so it's managed expectations, but does that also lessen the probability that you can exceed them?
No, all they have to do is show an actual game with a new system, because you're not going to get that from all the rumors and everything. You know, even if we can have someone create a clay model of the controller that's almost perfect, that's still just a controller, and what matters and what Nintendo does best is games. Mm-hmm. So they're going to show you a game that you've never seen before and you've probably never even heard of before, even in rumors, and that will be what you remember the most.
Yeah, and also I wouldn't underestimate the kind of coolness factor to send quote-unquote fanboys into a frenzy, anything more than, you know, seeing some of their favorite Nintendo games all of a sudden in HD.
Oh,
that
sure.
will leave a huge, huge impression on people.
Or to see their favorite Nintendo games in HD on one screen and then in their hands in another at the same time. I don't know how they're going to do it, to be honest. I mean, I hope we're not Tingle Tuner HD, but I mean, the Tingle Tuner was actually really cool when you put it in somebody's hands. They were like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, what Nintendo's great at E3 is introducing some concept in the press conference that is interesting, but that's also kind of hard to understand until you've actually tried it. And so what ends up happening is all across the trade show of E3 itself, people are like, oh, have you tried this? No, I heard about that. I didn't really understand what you're supposed to do with it. You got to get over there and try it for yourself. Then you'll really be excited.
Yeah.
And that's what they did with the Wii. That's what they did with the 3DS. They show these things that are a little bit abstract, and it makes you want to try it for yourself.
Do you think they can actually sort of deal with any of the problems, you know, sort of associated with the kind of connectivity style? You know, obviously, it did not go down well in 2003. In the presentation that leveraged that heavily. Is that something that was just specific to the kinds of software?
Yeah, they didn't have the games to back it up. You know, they showed Pac-Man, and it just didn't make any sense to people. Why would you want to do this?
Did they show Four Swords as well, Four Swords Adventures?
No, not really. They might have shown a video of it, but the only thing that was really playable that year on connectivity was Pac-Man Versus, which is a fine game, but it's not the most compelling software.
Yeah.
To show at E3, and Electroplankton didn't help that year. But
no one will ever accuse Electroplankton of helping anything.
Yeah.
Ever.
So you think it's not anything kind of intrinsic to the difficulty in presenting? Like, well, people have got this stuff on their own private screens, and but then there's the bigger screen. You know, they can get past any awkwardness with that.
Yeah, I think they can deal with that. The more important thing is they have to show a game for it that actually gets people excited, and Pac-Man is not going to do that.
Yeah, it's somewhat difficult to imagine, you know, considering they've really been behind the curve on 3DS, that all of a sudden they're going to be kind of, you know, ahead of it.
I mean, it's kind of a weird situation. It's like they're having to develop a second handheld.
We'll see. That I think it's premature to make that claim. We don't know what they're doing.
They have to at least take handheld experience in mind when they make these games that are going to use this thing, because there's a certain amount of kinetics of playing a game where the screen is in your hand that has to come in play here.
I mean, one thing that we've heard as well, of course, is the idea that it will, you know, still use the Wii Remote, possibly, you know, in itself or a successor to it, that there will be, you know, multiple ways to play these kinds of games. If that is true, will they admit that, or at least will they emphasize it, or will they say, look, we're just going to focus on the newer thing, which is the screen and the controller?
One thing at a time.
Yeah, you're not going to say, so we've got this Mario game that uses the controller, and then we've got a Zelda game that uses the, you know, sort of Wii Remote nunchuck kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a mixed message, or it's just too confusing. You can't digest it quickly.
What if they can say, like, look, here's a game that some players use this, some players can use that, depending on what they're doing in the game.
Well, if it's in the same game.
Yeah.
So you're actually using different kinds of controllers in a single game.
Depending on what your role is in the game, you can use different controllers. I mean, I could see them doing that and being like,
that's more possible, but still, you risk muddying the waters to.
But see, I think then you say, well, this is why we can have multiple controllers, because you can do this, and you can do that, and you can make this player is experiencing the game this way by using this kind of interface, and this other player is getting a different experience from the same game. It's like you have two games in one.
And it's sort of complementary, you know, right. I guess would be the
Look,
thing.
Asymmetric multiplayer is notoriously difficult to demo at a venue like E3. I mean, Nintendo struggled with it in their own games with Pac-Man Versus, but even Brink. I mean, that just came out now, but I mean, that game had weird showings at E3. There's a number of games that have tried this. Fear 3, which was shown last year, that was very confusing to people. It's just because you almost have to play the demo twice or have someone guide you through it for it to even make sense. And that's very hard to do.
So I think we're going to wrap up now by going around everyone as something that they are either, you know, looking forward to and that they'd like to predict that we haven't covered so far about the show. And so, James, I'm going to start with you.
I predict that I'm going to be really sick when this show is over. But but that aside, I think we're going to come out of not being a specific prediction. I think we're going to come out of whatever Nintendo is planning on showing with their cafe with more questions than we expect. I think that they're going to be deliberately vague about a lot of their plans for the system.
I hope so, for the podcast's sake.
Maybe not what
we need something to talk about for the next year.
I don't think necessarily the hardware specifications, but their plans. If that makes sense.
Right. I mean, specs wise, do you think they'll be less coy than they were last time, where, you know, they obviously had sort of stepped out of the arms race, but they didn't necessarily want to be explicit about that because it had negative connotations?
I think anybody now who walks up on a stage and starts talking numbers should shut the hell up, because it's irrelevant right now.
Nintendo wouldn't really do that, I don't think.
They wouldn't, but just in general, I think anybody...
But mostly, if someone asks, will they answer directly?
No.
No. Oh yeah, we got five GameCubes out together.
But that is the whole, you know, how many times more powerful it is than GameCube, that's how it someone asks and someone answered.
And the answer was a disaster for them.
Yeah, that was a quote from Perrin Kaplan, and I guarantee they won't make that mistake again.
And she doesn't work there anymore. I think they're more likely to say, you know, it doesn't really matter. Just go enjoy what the system can do.
Yeah, Reggie will say, don't these games look great?
Yeah.
That's his answer to that question.
The thing is, right? I don't think that their hardware specs for Cafe are going to be something that they're going to have to hide in shame from.
No, but they're not going to parade them around.
No.
But at the same time, they're not going to trumpet them either.
You know, I think instead of something like that, if they have some game that's viewable or playable, it's going to be something. There's going to have one that's like dark. Like I want to say like Resident Evil kind of game or Eternal Darkness. They're going to have something that's like dark, mature, edgy, has a lot of, you know, visual effects to it. And I think that'll go a long way just to answer that.
Well, so TYP, have you got anything further on that you particularly would like to
There's no way this is going to be true, but there's going to be a Metroid video for the next one.
Yeah, honestly, I think, you know, what they need to do with Metroid is kind of, you know, readjust their expectations about what it is. I mean, in some ways, this is a sad thing to think, but, you know, if you look at Castlevania and that kind of, you know, retreated into this niche of, like, recycling assets and stuff, and it kind of...
Literally, in some cases.
It's, you know, kind of carved out a nice little niche for itself and kept going, and I one of the things I'm hoping for is that, you know, we'll have a new Igarashi, you know, Castlevania for, you know, maybe 3DS, maybe 3DSware, you know, something like that would be really nice. I would kind of hope so. It's actually getting to be a while since the last one now. Order of Ecclesia was 2008, and they came out very regularly up to that point, so I'm certainly ready for another one. But if you look at what happened there, they kind of, you know, drew the boundaries of what they thought the market for a Castlevania was, and they inhabited that space. And, you know, with Metroid, they've pushed at the boundaries a bit, and I think they found them. And it's time to accept them. It doesn't mean we have to deal with, like, the same Zuma sprite being used for six games. I'm not advocating that by any means, but...
Get your hands off my Zoomer.
a bit of realism and you know, about what the Metroid audience is. And what the Metroid audience cares about, you know, which is really, you know, the world design.
Right.
I think would be healthy. And I think some of the stuff where it's like, oh, God, I hope Sakamoto's never involved involved with another Metro game ever again is faintly laughable, because you know, this is the man who directed Super Metroid and Zero Mission, and you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with him as a game designer in my view, but you know, the Other M thing was just as ill-advised.
Yeah. He just can't be the storyteller.
It was ill-advised extravagance on right. storytelling and things like that. So I think again, a healthy redrawing of the boundaries on that. We'll yeah, hopefully see Metroid carve out its own niche in the future, but I don't expect it to be now. I think it's going to go away for a while and come back.
Yeah, Metroid is a franchise that never had and never has, never will have any hope of being ultra-popular.
No.
It's too difficult, it's too complex, it's too hard to wrap your mind around, it's too hard to describe to other people why it's cool, why it's fun. It's just a niche game. Maybe it's a big niche, but it's still a niche. Mm-hmm. And Metroid Prime 2 Echoes would never have outsold Halo 2. Mm-hmm. I don't care what commercial you cut for it. I don't care if it comes out the week before or the week after or the month before or the month after. It's not going to happen, because Halo 2, for all its popularity, is a very simple game. And Metroid Prime 2 is one of the most complex and difficult games I've ever played. So it's never, you're never going to sell 10 million copies of that game ever. And that audience is potentially shrinking, you know, over time.
Yep. Now, Johnny, yeah, anything in particular? This will be your 11th E3, TYP's 10th.
Thank you, Greg. We were talking about that last night. And
both of you, it's that is a scary cumulative number of E3s that you've
yes.
been to there.
Yeah, we're together. Our E3s are old enough to drink.
So, I mean, at this point, after all this time, what is there that you could possibly be looking forward to and be impressed by?
That was sort of my sorry to jumping in. I feel like I'm a little jaded with E3. To me, it's almost a novel. It's not a novelty anymore. I do it every year, and there's always something that I'm really impressed with. But to me, it's like, yep, go to another E3.
Yeah.
I think Johnny is a little less jaded than me.
I've never felt jaded about E3. There are aspects of the experience that I dislike in terms of the crowds and the mm-hmm. and the volume of the show. Yeah. That I've never liked those things about it. Okay. But the things I do like about it, they just shift over time. You know, now it's more of a social event for me. It's more about hanging out with people who I only get to see at E3. And, you know, there's a certain, I think the Nintendo press conference is the one time in E3 where I get really giddy. And I do every year. I get really giddy because you just don't know what's about to happen, you know? And it could be anything. It could be really bad. It could be really good. But it's going to be exciting. It's going to be something that we'll talk about for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's really good. So that is the one part of the show where I feel 18 again, you know, back to my very first E3. Other than that, one thing that I've come to look for over the years is that one, sometimes maybe two games, they're often smaller games or games that don't get talked about very much, but they're games that seem to be doing something that appeals to me very specifically, very personally, or else they're doing something that's really clever and interesting that nobody else is doing or even talking about. So these are games like last year for me, it was Monster Tale, which turned out to be slightly disappointing in the mm-hmm. final product, but at E3, that game was such a breath of fresh air. It was so exciting to discover this amazing looking game that was almost perfectly made for me, that no one had ever heard of. No one was talking about it other than us. And that I'm always on the lookout for that kind of a thing. But in a more general sense, I think right now my plan is to order a 3DS and get it right before I go to E3 so that I can play with the eShop and do some Street Pass and maybe try some multiplayer with people and whatever, you know. And I want to make sure that the things that I see at E3 don't make me want to return it when I get back. Like I want to.
That's your litmus test.
It is my litmus test. Like I need to see things at E3 that make me excited about 3D for the next 12 months.
So to that end, are we talking first of all, you know, something?
It's going to be an aggregate of multiple games.
But obviously they're going to go a lot more in depth about something like Super Mario, especially if it is coming out this year as Miyamoto sort of wants it to. So you're going to get details on that. You're going to get details on games that we've got already announced that might excite you. But do we need more announcements here for me to pass that list? And do we need more announcements that actually make you think positively about the effect of, you know, stereoscopic 3D on gameplay.
I have no hope for 3D gameplay.
Dude, that's just a non-starter.
Yeah, I never thought that they would take that seriously, and I think the evidence proves that so far. And and I just don't know how much potential there really is there. Like, the potential for that exists in our minds, but it's not really been demonstrated very convincingly, and maybe for a good reason. So it's not that, but, you know, I think in terms of first party, as we've discussed earlier, I think we know most of what they're going to be showing at E3 in terms of 3DS first party stuff. You know, I don't know what Mario will be like, but I know that it's a Super Mario game, and I'm sure it will be really good.
I mean, the indications are certainly that it is going to be something that's sort of between 64 and Galaxy, but precisely what they mean by that is not entirely clear. But what we're thinking is that basically it's less linear and sort of deconstructed than Galaxy, so it's more open and exploration based.
That's very exciting. It, you know, as long as that raccoon tail doesn't have a timer on it, then I'll probably be pretty happy with that game.
Yeah, well, that is the thing. The power ups in the Mario 3D games have been sort of staunchly fleeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would, even just changing that up would totally change the feel.
But beyond the first part, I mean, again, I feel like Mario Kart, those are going to be really solid titles, but they do need to have a strong showing, because for me personally, there's nothing even out through August that I'm really excited about. I'm not that excited about Ocarina of Time. I think Star Fox 64 looks like a really lazy port of a game that I've already bought multiple times on multiple systems. So there's nothing really exciting for me on the horizon right now. So the new games that are shown there, they really do need to be home runs. And for me, because the first party stuff is pretty much a known quantity for the most part, and at least at the top level, I want to see some third-party stuff that is really imaginative and high production value, and like a Castlevania game from Igarashi, like that kind of a thing. That, I mean, on the DS, it's the third-party games that really cemented that in my heart, in my soul. So I need that to happen on 3DS, and so far, I haven't seen that. Not to say that Street Fighter isn't a really impressive launch title. It means nothing to me. So I have to find stuff that appeals to me personally from the third parties, and that hasn't happened yet, but it could.
I think the online shop could have a lot to do with it, too, because depending on what they start releasing, that could really fill in some of those gaps to be a sweetener. Even just the virtual console. They have some good stuff that, like, I've always wanted to play that portable game. Even that could really help.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of potential there. I'm understandably pessimistic about the eShop in the long term, but that is part. I mean, that's the main reason that I'm getting it soon instead of in October.
Well, John, we've come to you finally. Again, you won't be going. This continues your streak from 2006, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe that was the last time.
We miss you, John.
Yeah, man. I miss going there, man. It's like it's every single year now, some major thing comes up, because it's been my wedding, then my friend's wedding.
Skippable.
Should have got married at E3.
Yeah.
Hey, that hotel we were at 2 years ago, that sweet chandelier over that sofa with the weird stains on it, perfect place for a wedding.
But, you know, I'm sure you'll be watching with great interest. So is there anything you're looking out for?
I'm very interested to hear about Project Cafe, their online plans with it. And I'm hoping against hope here. I think that we'll be kind of pleasantly surprised, but I have a feeling that there will be some sort of partnership, because Iwata has made comments
with
that
Xbox Live.
No, I don't know. I really don't know, but I don't think that they're going to go solo for that.
Well, they didn't even on the Wii, they partnered with GameSpy to do the matchmaking servers, and that amounted to jack all.
Well, I think basically what I'm saying is I'm hoping they brought somebody else in to help them with the design of their online infrastructure and their online interface.
And that they'll actually be sort of proud enough of that to say, this is something worth talking about. We're taking this seriously. We're bringing this in.
Yeah.
I think they'll make some high-level promises, but they're not really going to be able to demonstrate a real commitment to online until later.
Mm. Well, I think that's going to do it. So thanks to everyone for participating in the fourth annual Season 2 RFN E3 preview show.
God, we own RFN.
All right. Well, obviously, we do not have time for listener mail on this episode, so we'll get back to that next week. We're also going to get back to, or we're going to start Retroactive next week on Perfect Dark. And I think for this first half of the discussion, the first week that we talk about Perfect Dark, we're going to focus on the multiplayer, and hopefully that'll give everyone a little more time to get deeper into the single-player campaign. So we'll talk about that later. So, if you haven't started playing Perfect Dark and you want to follow along with the discussion, play along with us, and contribute in the forum, of course, you might want to go ahead and start on that and maybe focus on the multiplayer first off if you want to join the discussion. Of course, head to the site. If you go to the article for this episode of the podcast, there'll be a link to the discussion where you can post your thoughts. And even if you don't have access to the game anymore, or you have no interest in playing it again, if you have some strong memories that you just want to share, or some strong opinions on the game, you can leave those too. You don't have to be actively playing it along with us, although I would encourage that. I think you'll probably end up with a new perspective on the game if you go back to it. I know I expect to as well.
Why is it so laggy?
So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. It's been a popular choice, and I think it's going to be a pretty cool discussion. It'll definitely be the first time, well, since Geist, that we've talked about a first-person shooter. And Geist was one of our best retroactives. Of course, Jeff Callis helped out with that, but I don't know that we're going to be able to get David Doak on the show, but we'll try. I'll put in a few calls. We'll see what we can do. So yeah, I hope you will participate with us on Retroactive. And of course, we will try to do some emails next week as well and catch up on that. So the address for that is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you have sent an email in the past week, don't worry, we got it. Actually, we got a lot of them, and I'll be sorting through them, and we'll try to cover as many as we can in the time that we have next week, and get some of your thoughts on these topics that we've been talking about, including E3, before the show comes up. Mike? What's going on in the world of radio trivia?
Well, actually, I've already recorded and edited an episode with Pedro, as promised. So the show will be up by the time you hear this. It'll be up before this is posted. So check that out. It's a lot of fun. There's some fun music and maybe some annoying music on it, too.
The Pumpkin Hill song, right?
No comment.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward
to
that.
This is Knuckles, yo.
I'm looking forward to the podcast, not that specific part of it. But yeah, be sure to hit up Radio Trivia Podcast Edition. It's in iTunes. It's also on our website. You can find it if you look for it. I promise you will enjoy that. And Newscast is out every week, of course. They, I'm sure, have plenty on their hands with E3 coming up. Actually, if you want to get more discussion of the specifics announcements, a lot of third-party games are announced before E3, and so I'm sure you'll catch a lot of that. We're probably not going to be talking about E3 much more on this show before it actually happens, since we've got Retroactive and listener mail, too. So hit up the Newscast for more detailed discussion of all the pre-E3 hype. And I wanted to mention a couple things that I've been doing on Crosstalk recently. Even though I have a new job and everything, I'm still knee deep in the podcasting.
He's a machine.
Yeah. I don't feel like a very well-oiled machine right now, but yeah, I'm trying to keep on trucking through it. So I recently recorded a show with Carl of Crosstalk Comics, actually, my first time on that show, and we spent, he and his brother Gus, we spent like an hour and a half talking about Spider-Man 2099.
I knew you were going to say it was Spider-Man. It was like, as soon as I heard comic
book. But Spider-Man 2099, it's a very special version of Spider-Man. Yeah. It's a really interesting comic book. And Carl and Gus, to their chagrin, actually kind of ended up liking it a lot. Because I think they both expected to hate it going in. So I hope you'll check that out. It's a really cool topic. And of course, 2099 is half of the starring duo in this year's Spider-Man video game that's I'm sure will be shown a lot at E3. So we'll probably be talking about that again soon, but it's very much related to video games, as a matter of fact, these past couple of years. And also, we just recorded a new episode of Box Office Poison, which will probably be out by the time this podcast hits. That's our movie podcast. We talk about Thor and Bridesmaids and Cave of Forgotten Dreams, the Werner Herzog movie. So A lot of really cool movies come up in there. And then the feature movie that Stan picked out is John Carpenter's They Live with Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yes.
If you like B-movies, you might know my feelings on that genre. But we do spend quite a lot of time talking about that famous B-movie. So, yeah, Box Office Poison, a lot of fun. It's a monthly movie podcast that we do. And I would recommend that you check it out. It's all ex-RFN. RFN alumni, Carl Stan, Mike Sklenz, and myself over at Crosstalk with a W.
Ex-alumni. Did we revoke their degrees?
Yeah, excommunicated.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for the show. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Later. Bye.
Let's do it. Let's roll. Let me get my notes up.
Oh, man. I have to read the notes from here. That's going to be shit.
You don't have to read the notes. I have to read the notes. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. TYP almost clapped, by the way.
Oh, wait.
It's just
I got it. I got myself.
It's hard not to, myself. You know?
It's impossible.
No, it's not, John. It's not.
Everything about the DSi was like, let us do market research on you, and you give us $170.
Yeah,
I mean, I was never interested in the DSi.
Yeah, it was like a PSP Go that had good games and actually made sense.
That can play the games you already bought. Yeah. Let's make that clear.